with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are, the 25th day of September, 2012, Titanic Tuesday on the horn, so named for the impeccable cognitive skills of that right-wing blatherskate who explained that there are fossilized seashells in the rock strata of West Virginia because of the movement of the Titanic plates. God, ain't he a smart one. Well, aren't they all? And thus, after searching for many years for a prop, you know, because everybody does two for Tuesday. I mean, how do we do two for Tuesday here? You get to call twice? No. We find that these things have to be organic. Moran Monday was organic. Friday on the front porch was just organic. It was just something that hit us. Wednesday night prayer meeting goes all the way back to the very origins of this program on terrestrial radio. Thorn in the Side Thursday came from our good buddy Horst, also a fan of Catch-22, and understood that there are either feathers in caps or thorns in the side. But we waited long and long for thorn in, for something to call Tuesday. And Titanic Tuesday seemed the perfect follow-up to Moran Monday, because the Morans are the ones who think they have the Titanic intellects. And Moran Monday ended on a Moranic note, without a doubt. By the way, my name's Bob Kincaid. Did I tell you that? Most of you know that. Some may not. No, I am. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm a little old hillbilly who lives in the hills and hollers of Almost Level, West by God, Virginia, where we had a blast go off. My God, it went off. Now, it takes me about an hour and a half to drive from here to the Coal River Valley because of the winding nature of the roads. But as the crow flies, it'd probably be two flaps and a swoop just to get there. It's just a couple of ridges over. And about an hour ago, about an hour and 2 minutes, maybe an hour and 3 minutes ago, there was a blast that just, I mean, you know, it's boom, 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 boom. It ain't thunder. That's no sonic boom of some fighter jet going over. When you live with this crap long enough, you can spot a mine blast depends on where you are, from a mile away, 2 miles, or 10 or 15 or 20. But it turns out it was right above Bo Webb's house. And, it's stressful. It's stressful. And, you know, all that dust goes up in the air and then comes down. Gravity, you know. Among other things, the mining companies make sure that their workers are all upwind of that filth when they put it into the air. But they don't care so much about the people who can't get upwind of it and just sort of live downwind of it, right? Yeah. But anyway, I live in the hills and hollers of Almost Level, West by God, Virginia. And this is a little effort that we have created over the course of nearly 7 years now. 7 years. 7 years on October the 24th, 2012, to be precise. Now, before that, we were doing terrestrial radio, too. Had a couple of years of that. But 7 years is our anniversary is October the 24th. And we've been trying to create something here a little different, something that wouldn't work on terrestrial radio, something that can only happen here. We call it conversation radio, and you are welcome to participate. Because, well, otherwise it's just a filibobster. Which does happen with some regularity. But you can get the horn on a variety of streaming platforms on the interweb tubes. TuneIn Radio, which you can use on your smartphones, and that way you can have the horn with you in your car. If you've got some sort of Bluetooth streaming device, you can have it in every speaker of your car. I've listened to Rick Smith that way, and I've listened to Mike Malloy that way when I had to go out after the show. There's TuneIn Radio, there's Stitcher. We were told last night about another platform called Streama, Streema.com. Kevin told us about that one. Did I say Stitcher? Yeah. And then there's Tuner Internet Radio, which is an app you can get for the iPhone at least. And the podcasts are available at iTunes as well as they are at White Rose Society. .org, where you can also get the streaming link. Easiest way to stream the program is just to go to headonradionetwork.com and click the button that says listen live. There's a free chat room out there. I had a note from Beth. She said, yesterday I tried to register at the Horn site, but I've still not received the email with the confirmation link. Could you please forward this to the wizard in charge of magically solving electronic glitches? I used this email account and the username. Beth, did you go to the chat room to register? Because it shouldn't be that complicated. We'll probably have an answer here as soon as the internet latency catches up with us. Because chat room moderator Lottie and chat room moderator Sparky and chat room moderator Texas Betsy are all in the room. So if you go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom and log in there, register there, it should be just super easy. So maybe try it that way. Yeah, see, that's what I thought. Texas Betsy just noted registering for chat is different from registering for the site. You may have been trying to register for the site, and that's something we need to work on. Down the road when the wolf is away from the door and all of that stuff. But chat room registration should be just real easy. Now, where to begin this evening, this Titanic Tuesday? Let's get this out of the way. We're $50 away from being done with fundraising for the month of September. If we can bring in $50 this evening, I don't say another word about fundraising until October the 1st. So it's and not only do you beat the Swede and add an extra 100 to the fundraising total for the month, you also get to shut me up about fundraising. And fundraising isn't just some esoteric thing we do. It is literally the means by which the horn stays on the air. We don't have any secret, shadowy funders, and this is just some sort of gravy. This is how we stay on the air. Just is. And get out the bells and whistles. We are now $8 away from me shutting up about fundraising for the month of September. We are $8 away from beating the Swede. Thank you very, very much. So just keep that in the back of your mind as the program progresses through the remainder of the evening. Now, where to go? Well, there's this. Okay, I warn you now. I hope this doesn't run a bunch of you off. We are going to talk tangentially about football in a little bit, NFL football in particular. Even non-NFL fans are writing to me about this. It has to do with the end of last night's Packers-Seahawks game, which I admit I didn't see because I fell asleep like an old guy. Yeah. But under the heading of No Fun League, that's what many people think NFL stands for, under the heading of No Fun League, Michael wrote in. Michael is, I don't think I'm betraying any confidences in saying this, Michael's from Wisconsin. He's a proud graduate of the university there, and he's a proud graduate of another Big Ten university somewhere else. But he says, you know, I'm no sports guy. You know, I'm no big sports guy, Bob. But I'll watch a Packers game every now and then. Well, I was watching last night and got a little hot on Facebook about it. Funny thing is, now I know how you must feel when folks complain when you talk about football. One of my best friends from Madison chastised me a bit specifically, as well as everyone else generally, for not thinking of the starving children, because I was talking about football. Good grief, so it goes. Anyway, I think I figured out that the universe is trying to teach cheeseheads and badgers something. 2011, NFL's only co-op, the Green Bay Packers, win Super Bowl 2011. 1 month later, Wisconsin erupts in protest to support workers' rights, inspiring the world, Arab Spring, Occupy Wall Street. 2012, Wisconsin votes to retain Scott Walker, also delivers vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan to Bishop Willard. 2012, Packers get screwed by non-union scab refs. I think the phrase is, says Michael, karmic loop. And I think Michael's right. So by now you probably know what happened. You know that there has been a referee strike ongoing in the NFL. You know that I mean, if you're even paying the least bit of attention, that the officiating in Packers games has been in NFL games has been nothing but abysmal. Last Monday night, the game between Denver and the Atlanta Falcons was just terrible. I don't know how it could have possibly been more incompetent until we got to last night, which I caught up with this morning. You give me grief because sometimes I think, hey, I was watching Morning Joe this morning and I get 15 emails saying, Bob, what's wrong with you? Turn off that blithering idiot. That's true, Marty. That's true. It's not a strike. The refs are being locked out. It is a lockout. Sorry for my poor choice of words. So instead of watching Morning Doofus, I go and I catch the rerun of SportsCenter. Okay? And so, naturally, the first thing right off the bat this morning was that. What happened at the end of the Seahawks-Packers game, whereby the Seahawks were awarded the victory over the Packers that they did not deserve, I mean, it weren't no touchdown catch, has just about all of the country talking. And I know it seems like, so what? It's a stupid game. Bread and circuses, Bob. Blah, 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 blah. This is a labor dispute. We're not talking about people making $300 million a year or $300 million on a five-year contract. We're talking about the ultimate working stiffs of professional sports, the officials. And they're asking to be treated a little bit better by a league that has enough money to burn a sopping herd of wet elephants with soaking wet $100 bills in bales. And the refs have been locked out, and there is absolutely. There's no confidence that any call is the right call. I think they've got midget league refs in there. And the replacement refs are within the classic definition of the word scabs, the lowest form of life that lives. a person who will take another person's livelihood to advance himself. They're scabs. Exactly, Dr. John. Yeah, this is one of those things that's not really about sports. Kind of in the way that frequently when we talk about sports, it is an analogy for how we talk about culture. Philip writes in. Philip says, the call that ended the Packers game was the most shocking ending that I have ever seen because it was so obvious both when watching it and then re-seeing it on replay. I was incredulous when the ruling was upheld. As usual, the media straddle the middle and faults both sides for not negotiating, but no one has locked out and replaced management. Needless to say, the labor relations component of the discussion goes by the boards, but I thought of it immediately because the ineptness and intransigence of the scabs were so evident. It is a shame that players and fans don't show solidarity by refusing to play and refusing to buy tickets, respectively. No, I got a thing. I think it was from Fritz on Facebook last night saying, "Let's boycott the NFL until they bring the real refs back." And at this point in time, you can't. I don't see why not. Otherwise, Steve Young proves himself to be correct in what he said last week after the game between the Falcons and the Broncos. And it was rather a stunning statement. Sandra sent that video along to me last week. I don't recall playing this. Hear this now, especially because Steve Young said it, and lo and behold, bless their funny little hearts. The Onion's take on last night's game was Steve Young suffers concussion attempting to explain final call in Packers Seahawks game. Michael sent this along. ESPN medical personnel confirmed Tuesday that analyst Steve Young suffered a traumatic brain injury Monday night while attempting to explain the referee's confusing ruling of a touchdown on the last play of the Packers-Seahawks game. It is evident that the replacement referee's questionable game-deciding call exerted a significant amount of trauma on Mr. Young's brain and caused him to temporarily lose consciousness while attempting to grasp the rationale of calling that play a touchdown, said neurologist Richard Spencer, adding that the woozy Young was helped off the ESPN broadcasting set immediately following his disoriented plea for the NFL to bring back the regular officials. Well, that, in turn, is a cultural back reference to this.
Is there one word that could describe it? First, before we get into it.
It's a kerfuffle.
Okay, sir, whatever he said.
The whole thing's out of control.
Look,
the whole situation.
Go ahead.
Chaotic.
Yep. Chaotic. Guys.
How do I start here? I can say this because the league officials have gone to sleep. So
yes.
Let me just go right at this. There's a lot of people in the league that would rather break the union. There's a lot of people who don't feel like officiating is on-field personnel. They feel like it's a commodity. But more importantly, everything about the NFL now is inelastic for demand. There's nothing that they can do to hurt the demand for the game. So the bottom line is they don't care. Player safety doesn't matter in this case. Bring the Division III officials. Doesn't matter, because in the end, you're still going to watch the game. We're going to all complain and moan and gripe and say there's all these problems, and all the coaches will say it, the players say it. Doesn't matter. So just go ahead, gripe all you want. I'm going to rest. Let them eat cake.
But we're talking about the marquee game of every
doesn't matter.
Monday
you're,
night football.
You're trying to
so
get
why doesn't
discussion.
It matter? Why
because
does it not
it's
matter?
Because it's inelastic. There's nothing that changes the demand for the NFL. So they want to break the union or they want to send a message to them. They don't care about player safety in the case of bringing Division III officials on because it doesn't affect the desire for the game. If it affected the desire for the game, they'd come up for the few million dollars.
Phil, how can the league defend it?
Now, this is kind of interesting because this is more like... Somehow or another, this feels like more honesty than you get like in the entire history of say Radio Rwanda Fox, or most any given broadcast day of CNN, or any of the alphabet soup networks, and yet it's about football. But it's not about football. Take, you know, if we had this great big audience that included right-wingers, there would probably be some sort of blog about this in the morning, tomorrow, but there won't be. Take what Steve Young said about it's inelastic and they don't care, and apply it to any labor struggle, and the outcome is still the same. It doesn't matter if you're hiring scab workers at a foundry or an auto plant or a factory that makes weenies. The playing field is not level. See how sports works its way into our consciousness? Even non-sporting people understand what it means when we say that the playing field is not level. If one side has to play ball uphill and the other gets to play downhill, hence why you'll hear color commentary, "Well, Keith, I tell you what, when he got the ball there at the 30, he found another gear and he was a-going downhill. He was a-running downhill. That running downhill's hard to stop." This is about what happens or the legal framework in which the money is allowed to screw over the workers. And the NFL refs are being screwed. No, what they do on any given Sunday, Monday, Thursday, occasionally Saturday, sometimes Friday, and on Thanksgiving Thursdays, is not earth-shattering. But you know what? The family that huddles around a hospital bed wondering if daddy or the husband or the son will be able to walk on Monday because a cheap shot was let go by a scab ref, you know what? Their work is earth-shattering. Sometimes we tend to think that just because we operate in our own little worlds, that we don't have impact. But we do. At every auto plant on every continent on this earth, every day, automobiles are rolled out that have to be able to do 70, 80, 100, 120 miles an hour. And if they are not put together diligently by the working people who assemble them, people die. The guy down at Fred's Brake and Muffler, who puts the new brakes on your car, it's got to matter to him every day. Because if it doesn't, somebody may die. Workers matter in this world. They matter a hell of a lot more than the people who don't work. I go back to what I said previously. There are not three classes, upper class, middle class, and lower class. There are them that work and them that don't. If somebody else's name besides yours is on your paycheck, however big or small it may be at the end of whatever pay period it is, you're a worker. If you're working for cash under the table and don't even get a check, you're a worker. The class of people who don't work is very small, and yet they hold the vast amount of the wealth and resources, not of this country, but of this entire planet. So yeah, this is a story about football, but it's not a story about football, and it's going to get less about football in a minute. But anyway, it was kind of interesting because Stuart Scott of ESPN, he He got all squirmy in his chair after what Steve Young said. Notice Steve Young says, "I'm going to rest," and well, let's just pick it up from there.
It doesn't affect the desire for the game. If it affected the desire for the game, they'd come up for the few million dollars.
Phil, how can the league defend it when a referee says that one team has the ball after a scrum, but another player from the other team came out of the pile with it?
Well, first of all, it's difficult to defend guys who are sort of overmatched, if you will. As Mike Tirico said, these are not sixth-round draft choices. These are collegiate free agents working in the NFL. There might be, of 100 guys, there might be 11 good enough in time to work in the NFL. So it's not their fault. Now, the question is, how soon does this labor situation get settled? The sooner the better. It's a labor situation.
Yeah, and, you know, both of those points are perfect. And I think people at home are so concerned because the game's obviously being affected.
Did you notice that one little telling moment there? The guy in the truck started the bumper music. He started the bumper music. Let's get away from this. They're going to be on the blower. They're going to be on the blower from, NFL headquarters. They don't like this. We're supposed to stay out of this. We've got a contract to play the games, and we can't talk about this kind of stuff. Roll the bumper! And then Trent Dilfer comes in.
So concerned because the game's obviously being affected. They're looking and saying, well, I can see that from my couch.
What's affecting it?
I'm just saying it's affecting the outcome.
That's not affecting anything. That's the NFL offer.
My biggest problem is it's so dangerous. I mean, again,
who cares?
Well, I think players care.
Of course they do, but they can't settle.
Players, I know they can't, Steve. That's not the argument. The point is this is multi-layered, and one of the layers...
Ah, see, the both sides do it argument. The pox on both your houses, the bullshit duality.
...is player safety, and it's such hypocrisy by the league to make such a push for player safety the last 4 or 5 years and then allow this to happen. People are Texans. Players are Texans saying,
Trent,
this is
they
brutal.
Cared,
somebody's going
to
get
if they
really
cared,
hurt.
To Bill's point, would you put Division III officials into the Indianapolis 500?
I'm not arguing with you. I don't think they
don't care
either.
Would you put Division III officials in the Indianapolis 500? Would you put Pinewood Derby judges at Darlington?
If they cared, they wouldn't do it. Because they look at it as a commodity. Just put some officials out there. I don't like the union anyway. Trust me. By definition, they don't care.
The answer that is most simple is often most elegant and most likely to be correct. By the way, Dr. John letting us know, NFL referee salaries range from $25,000 to $75,000 per year. Refs don't just work 4 hours a week. They spend an average of 30 hours a week reviewing game tape, sitting in on classes on the arcane rules, and they are arcane, and generally improving their craft. This is what professional workers do and what scabs don't. And so last night, a game that may wind up having somewhere down the road an impact on who does and does not go to the playoffs, which in turn has effect on how much people get paid. You know, their bonuses paid for their performance bonuses, you know, just like working people sometimes get. You know, not everybody just gets a turkey at Thanksgiving. Some people don't get the turkey. But like I said, this isn't about football. This is about labor and whether one has a right to withhold that labor. Guess who chimed in on last night's busted call, bogus ending? I mean, what you want when it's time to understand the nature of a labor dispute, what you want is a real economic heavy hitter, a serious thinker in the economic realm, right? Sure. Now, I mean, I think Steve Young analyzed it perfectly well. They don't care. The consumers are going to continue to consume. And that's what any management thugs count on. Well, they're not going to, just because we got a little lockout going on down to the Wonder Bread bakery don't mean people are going to stop eating Wonder Bread. Hell, if they find a rat or two or some cat feces in there, hell, they'll just think we're adding oat bran or something. Keep the scabs of bacon. They don't care. So now we go off to Cincinnati, Ohio. You know, I remember when I was a little kid, I actually went off to school before Sesame Street started. That's how freaking old I am. So through my first 5 or 6 years of life, I was a devotee of Captain Kangaroo. And there were little bits that were periodically repeated, you know, the bunny rabbit dropping the ping pong balls and Mr. Moose and Mr. Green Jeans and all of that stuff, and the old grandfather clock and animated pieces, little bits of nothing, but they were cute. And you do repetition with little children. And one of the things I remember is a little bit called the Cincinnati Dancing Pig. Oh, what was the lyric? The Cincinnati Dancing Pig with a rig-a-jig, jig-a-dig, jiggity-jig. It seems appropriate insofar as this was these remarks came in Cincinnati.
Did you guys watch that Packer game last night? I mean, give me a break. It is time to get the real refs. And you know what? It reminds me of President Obama and the economy. If you can't get it right, it's time to get out. I half think that these refs work part-time for the Obama administration in the budget office. They see the national debt clock staring them in the face, they see a debt crisis, and they just ignore and pretend it didn't even happen. They're trying to pick the winners and losers, and they don't even do that very well.
You know, that'd be great if it weren't for the fact that Eddie Munster here, Paul Ryan, isn't a devotee of an economic philosophy that says, screw the real refs. Hey, Paul, you want the... oh, yeah, because Paul Ryan's on the side of the working people, right? No. Ha, 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 they're like the Obama administration. They're so inept. Ha, ha, ha. No, no, no. People like you, Paul Ryan, hired those no-good scab refs. Your buddies did it. Management did it. Management, the capital, the money that can do no wrong, hired those scab refs instead of part with a few more dollars out of pockets that are so deep you can drop a pebble in them and never hear it land. This is the same guy who supported Snot Walker's attempt to end collective bargaining for public sector workers in Wisconsin. But he doesn't want to get the real government workers back. How many public sector jobs have been eliminated over the course of the spread of the entire country because of policies of this man and his filthy anti-family, anti-working people party? It's time to get the real refs back. Like Roger Goodell is sitting somewhere in an NFL office. Oh, well, okay, Paul Ryan says it's time to get the real refs back. Jesus. Then there's this, Dr. John adding, playoffs also affect NFL cities' economies. There are impacts and ripples all down the line. I hope the hell this is a joke. please, Michael, when you send me things like this, you have to say, Bob, it's a joke. The Daily Caller is the website run by the horse's rear end, Tucker Carlson. Maybe it's not a joke. Maybe it would be at the Onion if it was a joke. Headline, refs fired from Lingerie Football League still officiating NFL games. By Sarah Hoffman at the Daily Caller. If you think getting fired as a referee for the Lingerie Football League means you've lost the best job imaginable, have no fear. You can always get a job officiating NFL games. The Lingerie Football League had been keeping silent about the replacement referees in the NFL until early Tuesday morning. In August, Deadspin, which is a sports website, reached out to the league for comment about a rumor that some of the refs had been fired. After the controversial Packers versus Seahawks outcome Monday night, the league responded and took the opportunity to jab the NFL as well. Because of the LFL's perception that it is much more critical for us to hire officiating crews that are competent. Okay, so there aren't any real... Okay, LFL refs aren't really working in the NFL. The point being made is that the Lingerie Football League actually cares more about the quality of its officiating than does the NFL, you know, the pros. And the LFL is still up and running. 7-on-7 full contact tackle football played indoors on a 50-yard field. 12 teams in the league, the Philadelphia Passion, the Chicago Blitz, and the Cleveland Crush. The uniforms consist of lingerie with some safety pads and hockey-style helmets. Okay, I get it. Scared me there for a minute, Michael. Ron and Raleigh noting, the analysis I heard was that Roger Goodell is showing that he has the cojones to stand up against the union so that in the soon-to-come negotiations with the players' union, they'll know they can't be rolled. He can't be rolled. Lock people out. Then make them out to be the villain. The owners want it all. Let's put them on the field and see who comes to see them play with scab refs. That would not be much fun. That'd be like watching me play football. And I was never very good in my Philip says, I must admit it was a difficult decision, but after much thought and deliberation, I have decided that this year's Henry Clay Frick Award goes to Roger Goodell and the NFL owners. At first, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker was a sure winner, but I suspect that after watching last night's game, even he has reconsidered the roles of scabs, at least with respect to football. More importantly, this is the owners and Goodell's second lockout. Congratulations, Roger. You truly deserve it this year, and I look forward to you accepting it on behalf of the owners. You want and have it all. Michael pointing out to boycott or not to boycott, my buddy Jerry in Green Bay brought up a disturbingly good point with regards to the question, how much more will fans put up with? It's the NFL. America's game, and a train wreck. How's that not watchable? But see, this is the point, this is that crossover moment where people begin to watch not because they want to see great professional football. Me, I'm a college football fan. I like it better. But at this point, there's a crossover taking place where people aren't tuning in to see expertly played with consequences. You know, there are already some teams whose seasons are largely written off. Witness, sorry, Bill, the Cleveland Browns. They're just bad. The Eagles may be toast, too. Sorry. Tough Sunday for the Steelers. I haven't checked in with Boss Man Wayne. He can't be in good shape. But that's not what people are watching for now. Now we've crossed that line and gone over to where NASCAR lives, where some people are showing up to see if somebody's going to die. Because we have learned more and more and more in recent years just how hazardous to human health this game is under the best of circumstances. So we've got new helmet rules. And rules about helmet-to-helmet contact and leading with one's head in tackles. Oh, Marty says, by the way, as far as the refs are concerned, you left out snatching away their pensions and replacing them with 401ks. Yeah, boys, what we're going to do, we're going to screw them pensions. Don't you want to get in the market and get rich like us, huh? Okay, I was feeling better, but now I'm not feeling so much better. Dr. John has read the article a little more closely. He says, by my reading, yes, the LFL refs are working NFL. Due to several on-field incompetent officiating, we chose to part ways with a couple of crews which apparently are now officiating in the NFL. We have a lot of respect for our officials, but we felt the officiating was not in line with our expectations. That statement in response to the Green Bay Seattle game, the story says. Oh, dear. Maybe they are. Marty noting, that's not a joke. It's true. So now, economic genius serious-thinking Republican Paul Ryan says that scabs are just like the Obama administration. You see how this works? You see the absolute 180-degree twisting of reality? I mean, like hot taffy. After sitting in the noonday sun, you can just twist it completely around. Because it's the Republican Party that despises working people, despises union. It was the Bishop Willard Romney campaign that said just the other day, Barack Obama's goal is to make everybody in America join a union. As if that's a bad thing. Raising the so-called specter of the return of the Employee Free Choice Act that never got out of the Senate, even though Harry Reid promised it would. I was there when the promise was made. It didn't get out of the Senate because it was stopped by Republicans, but because it was stopped by Blanche Lincoln, an alleged Democrat from Arkansas who was really the senator for Walmart. It was stopped by Ben Nelson of Nebraska, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. We're in the middle of an economic crisis, and this wouldn't be a good time to treat working people like something other than garbage. But in the weird and sick world of Eddie Munster, the scabs are like the Obama administration. You know, how I wish the Obama administration was going to try to make sure everybody could join a union, because you do understand, of course you do. You're the Horn family. This isn't some terrestrial radio audience that has, a handful of right-wing weirdos out there the whistling whatever the theme music is to Atlas Shrugged Part 2. For which they couldn't even hang on to the cast of Atlas Shrugged Part 1. Jesus. No, you know what would happen if everybody in this country was able to join a union. We'd have a middle class back. We would have a viable, working, vibrant working class that was able to build America back to America's former greatness. But fear not, ain't gonna happen. I guess Bishop Willard missed that whole memo from Barack Obama's buddy Rahm Emanuel in Chicago over the teachers. But, you know, the next time that you think that you're just above it all and at least paying attention periodically to the sporting page is beneath you, you might find out otherwise. Because this is our national metaphor. This is how we talk to each other about things that go beyond the sport itself. And if an industry as filthy freaking rich as the NFL can't continue to pay for the officials' pensions who make the game legitimate, well, you already know that nobody's safe. Just say it. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 304-658-3333. This is Conversation Radio. It's Titanic Tuesday, and let's go to the lines. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, wrong button. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob? It's me, Reggie, again.
Hey, Reggie, how you doing?
Just fine. I told you I'd call you back, and I did.
I'm awful glad.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know, your good old friend, yours and mine, Dana Loach, was attacking Elizabeth Warren Heritage once again, along with everybody else.
Oh, I saw the Thomas. Yeah, a bunch of right wingers decided to at a Scott Brown event. They did the tomahawk chop and war whoops. Is that it?
Yeah, and she called her a manipulative. She called her a pathological liar, a manipulative liar. She lies on everything. Yeah. You know. She's allowing everything from her heritage to God knows what else.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, Elizabeth Warren's mother is part Cherokee and part Delaware Indian.
Right.
She has a right, but you know that's there's deeper stuff there. When somebody clothed in what would appear to be white privilege says that they want to at least acknowledge that this is not one lily white America. That we've all got all kinds of genetics running around in our bloodstreams. The white supremacists and they, you know, you don't have to be wearing a sheet and a pillowcase to be a white supremacist. They get real cranky about that.
Why you say that, Bob? Why exactly do you say that, Bob?
What do you mean?
I mean, you said that they get all cranky when they hear somebody who's like, you know, biracial.
Well, they do because. It is a threat to them that anybody would not stand within the four corners of white purity.
Right. Well, Dana Loach herself said that she has a background of having Native American blood in her ancestry and family herself. But she said, like Elizabeth Warren, at least she has her papers about that. You know, her birth certificate, or, you know, papers.
Yeah, because her papers are in order. God, you know, I've got a very dear friend who is a real live, honest to God Indian.
Yeah.
And I asked my buddy Matt one time, because I just want to get stuff right, Reggie. I said, so when I talk about Native peoples, do I say Native American? Do I say Indian? Do I say First Peoples? And he said, Bob, your people named my people Indians a long time ago, and we get uppity at the idea of being renamed in the 20th or 21st century. So Indians will do just fine,
right?
And so that's what I tend to stick with. But he also introduces himself. He's a friend of mine. His name's Matt Sherman. He's a brilliant man. He's done tremendous good in this life and in this world.
Right.
And Matt will introduce himself by saying, "Hi, my name's Matt. I'm an Indian. I got some white folks in me, but I can't prove it."
Right.
Because that's, you know, that's the classic take on white folks, where you would say, well, you know, I got some Indian in me, but I can't prove it.
Right. And she also said that she dissed some Native Americans who told her to stop pretending that she was Native American or Cherokee, because she wasn't. There was no Indian blood anywhere near her ancestry. That's what she said on her radio talk show today. And that she should be tried and convicted for practicing law somewhere where she doesn't have a law license.
Oh, that's the that's part of a new meme that I've seen going around, Reggie. There's this new thing out there that Barack Obama and Michelle were disbarred in Illinois. What's in their closets? Why were they stripped of their law licenses?
Right. Well, that's what she said on her radio talk show today. And that, like I said before, she called her a pathological liar. She just lies about everything. And she can't stand the sound of her voice. She can't stand when she lies like that. She can't stand the very sound of her voice when she plays on these audio sound, well, soundbite clips, they call it. You know, that's the difference between liberal and conservative talk radio. You guys play your sound clips near entirety or near entirety, whereas they edit out and play only soundbites. Bits, kibbles, bits and pieces. I mean, if you don't like to play those audio soundbite clips, then don't play them. But then don't play them. Talk over them, bitch about them, and then lie and distort about what the person or people actually said on those audio sound clips. What do you think about that, Bob?
I play them sometimes when I think we've got something really worth working with.
Yeah.
And I will interrupt people. I'll interrupt the clip and talk about it as I did.
Not you, Bob. I'm talking about the conservatives when they do it.
What they do is, they operate from the Andrew Breitbart school.
Yeah, and she's his protege. She's the editor.
Oh, sure she is.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, she is a Breitbart protege. So that means by definition, she's going to make it up as she goes along. You know, there's a saying we have up here in the hills: the truth ain't in 'em.
Right.
And it's not, Reggie. It's just not.
It isn't. Right. You say they operate from Andrew Breitbart's school of what, lying?
Yeah. Well, by selective editing, by making clips appear to be and say things that they aren't.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's witness, for instance, the Shirley Sherrod.
Yeah.
Business.
Yeah.
You know, where something that she said was made to appear to be something the diametric opposite of what she actually said.
What did she say? Well, you don't know.
I don't recall right off the top of my head, but she was talking about how she did her job.
Yeah.
And how her family had been the victim of racism in like lending practices or something.
Right.
By the time Andrew Breitbart's people were done with it, that clip had been turned into her stating that she ran around deliberately discriminating against white folks.
Uh-huh. Right.
That's how they operate.
Right. Look, they're using believer.
Oh, yeah, plenty believed her. I mean, she was preemptively thrown under the bus by the Obama administration.
Who? Oh, Shirley Sherrod.
Yeah.
But that wasn't. But she didn't say that. She didn't really say that fully.
No, she didn't.
She didn't say that fully. They just clipped it. You know, they just selectively edited those sound clips out. Right.
Right. Exactly.
And who did she get an apology for that?
No, she filed a lawsuit, and that's one of the things that Andrew Breitbart was sweating when he OD'd or whatever it was that he did, and went off to hell like he did.
Right. 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 So I hope she got her job back.
Well, I hope she ends up owning Breitbart.com and Breitbart.tv and all those other dumbass things that it would be more than fitting.
Right. And then what would she do with them once she owns them all?
Shut them down.
Shut them all down?
Why not? I mean, that's not for me to say.
But that's her decision, I guess.
Yeah, but I'm not even sure what the status of that is. I'll probably get an email updating me now. Whenever I wander out on the plank.
Right. She had the Newt Gingrich on her show last week.
Oh dear God.
This past Friday.
Yeah, Newt Gingrich, who himself has gone out on the wild side and decided to endorse Todd Akin. Did you catch that, Reggie?
I think I heard it on his show.
Yeah, that's Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. We have to give credit where credit's due.
Right.
He He decided that he's going to, I mean, he appeared at some sort of $5,000 or $4,000 a plate fundraiser at some restaurant for Todd Akin in the last couple of days, saying that, you know, America needs Todd Akin, you know, because America needs a guy who thinks that women are at fault when they get raped. That's good. That's so good for America.
Right. And she said that she doesn't want anybody to talk smack about Todd Akin's legal, legitimate rape comments when nobody would criticize and chastise Elizabeth Warren for being a, as she called it, a Pocahontas. You know, play off of Pocahontas?
Yeah.
And she called her a Pocahontas. You know, she doesn't want anybody...
And, of course, doesn't understand at the same time, Reggie, that she's not insulting Elizabeth Warren. What she's doing is insulting people of Native heritage, because there are a lot of people who look... Well, they just... Yeah.
Well, you can't tell just by looking at it.
Right, you cannot tell by looking.
That's what Nicole Sandler said on her radio talk here today. You can't tell just by looking at them. Looks are deceptive, you know. Looks can be deceiving, you know. You know, they don't say looks can be deceiving.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, you can look at me and say, well, that guy's probably Scots-Irish. But the fact of the matter is, if you dig far enough back in the genetic history, well, it's Scandinavian origin. But we can follow that backward, and pretty soon every last human being of us on the planet is part of a cluster of about 2,000 proto-humans in a little cluster in Africa. You know, that's we are every human being on the planet.
Right. And I've heard that the black man was the original man, and the black woman was the original woman.
Of course they were.
Exactly. Louis Farrakhan says that all the time.
You know, look at what the Bible teaches about the creation of humanity.
Right.
It says that woman was created from man, and this is not the old debate about the chicken or the egg, and this is also not Prayer Meeting Wednesday. But that's lunatic. Right. There is no way that the first female was created from the first male. No.
Right. Right. And I don't know if she herself is Jewish or half Cherokee or whatever minority race she came from, but you know, she's attacking Elizabeth Warren for being, well, I don't know, Native American, even though she...
But see, this shows the desperation of that campaign. When you're, because you know, there are still Indians in Massachusetts,
right?
And there are still people of Indian heritage in Massachusetts, but that doesn't matter to Scott Brown. I mean,
right.
for people who, you know, for people who don't know, I got some sound here. Let me run it real quick, Reggie, just so folks will know what we're talking about. This is these are Scott Brown's staffers at a rally, doing the tomahawk chop and making Indian hooting noises. Just check this out.
Right.
Here we go. What do you think of that? Man, I tell you what, that's... It.
Go ahead.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're the real Americans, aren't they? Remember, they're going to take their country back.
It's very highly offensive to Native Americans. And he was attacking Elizabeth Warren on that...
Yeah, but he wasn't... But the point these clueless fools don't understand, Reggie, is they're not attacking Elizabeth Warren. They're attacking the people who have been on this continent longer than any other human beings have.
Including African Americans?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bob.
They have no regard for anything but white privilege.
Yeah.
If you're not cloaked in white privilege, you don't get to play, and you damn sure don't belong in the Senate.
Well, my people were slaves, you know. My people were slaves, you know, brought over here against our will, you know.
Yes, I do.
My people were slaves, you know, and we had no rights, none whatsoever. It took like 50 years for us to get them, or like 40 or 50 years to get those rights, right?
Oh well, it took closer to 100.
Yeah, that too.
After the Civil War, the fact of the matter is, I mean, that the slave trade and this country and this continent's descent into the use of bond slavery is one of the saddest instances of the inhumane violence in the entire history of our planet. And the fact of the matter is, the reason that the white folks turned to bond slavery, to chattel slavery, is because the Indians wouldn't work. They died instead.
Right.
Something on the order of 20 million native peoples were killed by the Spanish alone in Mexico. That's without counting the ones who were the entire cultures who were wiped out by disease when that filthy pig Hernando Soto marched through the southeast.
Right. And, well, you know, and Dana Loke said that Elizabeth Warren should just quit the race, you know, leave the race. She should just get out of the race while she's still in the race. She's such a pathological, manipulative liar.
Yeah.
She should just quit the race. That's what Dana Loke said on her show.
Oh, right, because that's all they got.
What?
That kind of an attack. It's all they got. The woman has far better ideas than anything. You know, remember the candidate that is being supported in this, Scott Brown, is a former Playgirl centerfold model, for Christ's sakes.
Well,
I mean, this guy has all the substance of a piece of angel food cake.
Right, I'm sure most gay guys would be happy and appreciate that little piece of knowledge.
Well, I think most everybody knows Reggie, but
he's a former Playgirl centerfold.
Oh yeah,
uh-huh.
Oh yeah, he was Beefcake.
I'm surprised you didn't attack him on that.
Well, I mean, what's to attack? I mean, that's like attacking a squirrel for being for eating nuts.
So why is he, if he was a former Playgirl centerfold, why is he attacking somebody else on their heritage or whatever? You know, it's irrelevant. I thought they were supposed to stick with the important issues, you know.
Well, he can't, because he can't win on the issues. We are in the year 2012, Reggie. There are a significant number of Americans who may actually be waking up to these thugs. And so if he talks... I mean, look, he had to run away from... he was among the first, Scott Brown was among the first to run away from Bishop Willard Romney's 47% comments.
Right.
Right. You know, but by the same token, the people who supported him, these are the same. It was a Scott Brown supporter who came to an anti-Affordable Care Act rally carrying a poster that said if Brown, because they wanted Brown in there to stop the Affordable Care Act from passing.
Right.
And the poster said, if Brown can't do it, and then it had a drawing or a picture crudely drawn, you know, it's teabaggers after all. A crudely drawn picture of a pistol, and it said, if Brown can't do it, Browning can. The reference being to a Browning semi-automatic pistol.
Right. And she said it, and Dana Loke said that she's on the Romney train, and she attacked the President Obama about his UN speech today. You know, she attacked him on his UN speech.
Oh, and of course, there was the attack because we didn't walk out on Ahmadinejad's address, and you know, because we didn't follow the Israeli ambassador, because the Israeli ambassador walked out, and
right.
What was the headline I saw from some right wing paper? Israeli ambassador walks out, U.S. delegation sits and listens.
Right, and he said that this government appeases and apologizes too much to the Muslim side too much. He's tired of him bending over, bowing down.
But that, Reggie, is because...
them and their belief, and their religion.
That's because these people are aching. Aching for World War III.
Or aching for one. Go ahead.
No, the right wing is dying. Well, they're not dying. They're aching, they're yearning for my kids, everybody else's kids, to go and fight and die in Iran, in what could be the opening act of World War III, but of course they don't want to go because they're chicken hawks. They're as yellow as piss. Right. The right wingers are.
Right, and I thought he was supposed to, you know, I thought he was brought in to, shall we say, quell the war, you know, stop the violence, bring our troops home.
Well, you know, Lindsey Graham doesn't want to bring the troops home from Afghanistan either.
Well, okay. And I heard Rush Limbaugh attacking Noel Donald for being called the lady by a Minnehaha, you know, by that guy that he was interviewing. He called her the lady.
Oh, Jesus. They're just filthy, Reggie. They're just filthy.
Yeah, they are. They are just filthy. And he what does she want? What does she want to be called? The tramp?
There you go. But then again, you have to understand that Flush Flimball is a drug-addled junkie, and he is also deeply misogynistic. He doesn't like women.
Yeah, he said he blames them for having a very small dick. That's what Nicole Sandler said. He calls them feminazis and whatnot.
Oh, yeah, feminazis. All right. But you know, you let one Democrat make it draw a comparison between the big lie of the Republican Party about Social Security and Medicare and Joseph Goebbels. Wow, we have a hissy about that. Meanwhile, however, if Rand Paul says that the government of we the people of the United States is turned Nazi, you know, no, that didn't. I talked about it at some length on this program, but it just blew right by the for-profit media, and right. And 25 years of, I mean.
What?
20 years or whatever of Rush Limbaugh saying feminazi
and broad.
You know, feminazi is odious in the extreme, but, well, that's just Limbaugh. You know, he's a comedian. He's an entertainer. He's funny that way.
Yeah.
Because they get a pass.
Right. But if a Democratic, liberal, progressive radio talk show host, such as yourself or anybody else, says anything about them, what would happen exactly?
Oh, there'd be the outrage machine would crank up into high gear without a doubt.
You mean like Fox and them?
Yeah, sure. And you know, the Daily Beast and the Daily Caller and the Daily Blaze and the Newsmuck and World Nut Daily and Brian Fisher over at the American Family Association. Yeah, they'd all be on it.
And Matt Drudge and Breitbart.com would be all up.
Oh, sure. And then the for-profit media would cover it.
And, of course, the radical right-wing hate radio would be talking about it, too.
24/7.
Yeah, exactly. 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 But, you know, we had, you know, well, why do we have to be the mature ones, you know? The difference between liberal and conservative talk radio is that we're so much more mature than they are. You know, we have to, I don't know, rise above all of that. You can't stoop down or resort to their level, you know, of name calling, right?
No, I name call because they earn it.
I mean, shouting, yelling, screaming, you know, putting down people. You know what I mean? You know, disrespecting people.
I have no. Well, no. Let me be clear. I have no respect for them. I wouldn't cross the street to spit on what Rush Limbaugh's shoes.
Right. Well, yeah, you can call them anything you want to, Bob.
But I try to be factual about it. The man is a junkie.
That's what I mean by maturity. You know, you prove facts on actual facts on this show.
The man was caught taking a bottle of Viagra that was not prescribed for him in his name on an all boys weekend to the Dominican Republic, which is a haven for child and especially little boy sex.
Right.
Okay, so what are we supposed to think?
Well, he's a junkie, like you said. He's a drug-addled junkie, oxycontin, cigar-smoking.
He's an oxymoron, and he gets $50 million a year to do it. I can only hope his Gulfstream 5 jet has roll-down windows.
Yeah, me too. But what about all these other right-wing hate radio talk show hosts, you know, like Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Michael Sewage and the rest of them?
Oh, Michael, did you say Michael Sewage? That's pretty good. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, Michael Stewart and Laura Ingraham and all of them.
They've got their own histories. I mean, Michael Savage, whose name is really Wiener, we call him the Savage Wiener. He was a pal of Allen Ginsberg, and Michael Savage Wiener is a notorious homophobe, and one suspects that it's probably because, you know, he's one of those people who's barricaded inside his own closet.
Right. Well, like I said, what about the rest of them? Or even Dr. Laura Slushinger?
Oh, don't get me started. We would spend the entire show running down these freaks because every one of them has something something truly revolting in their past for which the right wing is more than willing to forgive them. You know, we don't forgive ours. You know, you let a congressman like Anthony Weiner get caught taking a picture of himself in his tidy whiteys, and that man has to leave Congress.
What a conservative!
Well, look at David Vitter. The guy was caught hiring hookers.
That's an actual crime.
And he was promoted from the House of Representatives to the Senate.
Right. Right. But that's an actual crime, isn't it?
In most states of the Union, it is.
Yeah, but they jumped on Anthony Weiner for just taking a picture of him. So
right.
That's not a crime or illegal. They threw him out.
No. That was another hatchet job.
Yeah.
Reggie, it's awful good to hear from you, my friend, and don't be a stranger, all right?
Yeah, you too, Bob.
All right. You take care now.
Yeah, you too, Bob.
Bye now.
Don't let these people get you down, Bob.
Oh, I don't let them get me down. They're just a bunch of freaks.
Yeah, I know. They're a bunch of freaks to me, too.
All right. You take care, Reggie.
Yeah, you do too, Bob.
See you now. Bye.
See you now. Bye.
Our new buddy, Reggie. Yeah, I want to go back to this this freakazoid scream fest. Now this was at a Scott Brown rally where staffers, Deputy Chief of Staff Greg Casey, Constituent Service Counsel Jack Richard, and GOP operative Brad Garrett were all doing the tomahawk chop and Indian war whoops. This really, really does get under my skin. For reasons perhaps I can't fully explain. You got it. Now this was the scene was one in which Elizabeth Warren's supporters were there displaying their support for her, and these thugs from the Brown campaign showed up doing an Indian war whoop and the tomahawk chop. And it wasn't just anybody. Do you remember, you know, lately we've talked, mentioned a couple of times, we've time traveled back to the year 2000. Do you remember that famous photo? I became familiar with it at bartcop.com because he had one with all the names attached to it. Do you remember the riot at the vote counting in Miami, in Miami-Dade County? And the people with their arms in the air and their ferocious looks on their faces, and God damn it, stop the count. Bart Kopp used to post a photograph periodically that would show every last one of them was a Republican operative. Somebody's paid staffer. Did the for-profit media ever cover that? Nah, not so much. Well, this is similar. This is a perfectly peaceful expression of political sentiment. You know, protected speech. Only, apparently, not quite as protected as if it was being done by a corporation, because their speech is more protected than ours. It gets to happen on robocalls where all we can do is hang up. It gets to happen on our TV boxes where we have to sit there with our eyes glued to the box and listen to the advertisement and pay attention to the message. Corporate speech is more protected than, you know, just if you show up Because if you show up with your Elizabeth Warren sign in Massachusetts, outside a pub in Boston this past Friday, as was the case here, you'll be met by a bunch of ripig-licking thugs, you know, doing this. Yankees suck? Wait a minute. What was I saying a few minutes ago about sport being our national metaphor? Yeah. What word is, and I'm not trying to descend into anything, but what word is there to describe these staffers? These are staffers, okay? Get that. These are staffers. Deputy Chief of Staff Greg Casey, Constituent Service Counsel Jack Richard, and GOP operative Brad Garrett. In two out of three cases, at the very least, Deputy Chief of Staff Greg Casey and Constituent Service Counsel Jack Richard, these people are being paid not just by the people of Massachusetts, but by you, wherever you are in this country. You paid for these assholes to do this. Oh, sure, it was some nano chunk of a penny, but it was yours, and it was given to them, and they did this with it. Don't say it because it was off hours or wasn't office hours. No, that's a bunch of baloney, too. This Constituent Service Counsel Jack Richard. Counsel generally means lawyer, doesn't it? Why does that man have a law license after conduct like this? Why does Deputy Chief of Staff Greg Casey still have a job serving, allegedly, the people of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts? Because it's clear they have absolute disdain for anybody who happens to still live in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and for that matter in the larger United States. They have absolute disdain for anyone who has native blood in their veins. Because that was nothing but pure, straight-up, unmitigated mockery. And it wasn't just mockery of Elizabeth Warren, because Elizabeth Warren really, really does have native blood flowing through her veins. Her mother, her grandmother, being of Cherokee and Delaware Indian background. By the way, Delaware is not an Indian word. Those were a group of tribal peoples who were attached to Lord Delaware. Someone will probably tell me what their real tribal name was. Maybe I'm not sure. I don't know what. I'm not even going to guess. Andy writing in, he says, Mr. Bob, Senator Scott Brown gets top billing in the Senate by the Federal Reserve and Treasury regulators for trying to water down the Dodd-Frank Act. Friday's New York Times, September 21st, behind the scenes, some lawmakers pushed to change the Volcker Rule, if it wasn't weak enough already, Andy notes. Brown was asked by the Boston banks and hedge funds to do his best to water down proprietary trading rules by emasculating the Volcker Rule. He put his top staffer, a Lehman Brothers alumnus, a Mr. Hoops, on the case. It should be clear, Mr. Brown represents the top 1%. Elizabeth Warren is for the 99%. It's pretty simple. And it should be pretty much a foregone conclusion out of that, right, Andy? But it won't be, because there's a whole bunch of the 99% that will run, not walk, not briskly stride, but run to the polls to vote for the centerfold. Bill in Cleveland saying, these assholes need a good ass kicking. These folks are yuppie punks, some longshoremen or other 30s labor organizers. They need some to teach them a class in street politics. Yep, Ron's on the same page. It reminds me of the crowd at the County Election Commission in Florida in 2000. As I was slowly typing this, Ron says, you were saying it. Great minds, Bob, great minds. Indeed. Todd chimed in and says, sounded like they were chanting Cherokees suck, not Yankees suck. Sandra and I both got Yankees suck, Yankees suck, Yankees suck. Sandra said that was pretty funny. I mean, some things transcend politics. Sport is one of them. Ah, okay. Thank you, Sal. Thank you. In the chat room, Sal telling me, and by the way, Beth got into the chat room. Yay, Beth. Welcome. Sal in the chat room said the Lenape people were later called the Delaware, because they allied themselves with Lord Delaware. Was he a Frenchman? Okay, yeah. Sandra says simply, you'll want to read this quote from Alan West on air. This has to be good. From a blog called No More Mr. Nice Blog, headline, everyone will be so surprised when Alan West beats Jeb Bush in Iowa in 2016. The blogger writing, I think Alan West is going to be the Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, pre-sex scandal Herman Cain of 2016, the candidate who does much, much better than anyone expects, even though, or more likely because, he's clearly from Crazy Town. He'll definitely be successful if he keeps this up. And here's the quote. Or here's the setup. Florida Representative Alan West ripped President Barack Obama's United Nations speech Tuesday, saying he would have told the UN that America would be an angel of death that wreaks havoc and destruction on anyone who attacks the U.S. Quote, my statement to the United Nations would have been, the future does not belong to those who attack our embassies and consulates and kill our ambassadors. The angel of death in the form of an American bald eagle will visit you and wreak havoc and destruction upon your existence. You'll notice it's an American bald eagle and not a guy with an Urkel haircut, the Florida congressman wrote in a Facebook post on Tuesday. Angel of death? Okay, point taken. Jan writing in, Bob, please do not call these people arseholes. Arseholes are useful. Regards, Jan. All right. You know what? I guess we're back to referring to them as ticks again. Anopheles mosquitoes, perhaps. Yeah. Jeebus. As an outgrowth of last night's story about the high schooler who got a beating from a full-grown man in a high school in Texas, I think it is safe to say that Texas Betsy was more than a little distraught. Betsy writes in and says, can you tell that I'm still steaming about yesterday's story? Betsy, being the expert educator that she is, took yesterday's story tangentially into the classroom today. Not by telling them about the story. It's a gross story, and it's traumatizing, and it's hard enough being a student in 2012 as it is. No. You may recall that yesterday's story about the child being beaten in the Fort Worth area high school had to do with her having been accused of letting another student copy her work. And she was given the choice of 2 days in-school suspension or taking a beating. And because she didn't want to miss the class time and because she cares about her grades, she chose the beating. So today, expert educator Betsy walked into her classroom and said, There's a new award in my classroom today. Super clap for the super coach who can teach a classmate a skill, fact, or word they didn't know yesterday. I reiterated to them that I know it's coaching if the person learning can explain it to me with the coach sitting at a different table. We talked about what's wrong with copying, and I told them it's cheating was an easy out. The problem is that kid one doesn't learn it, kid two doesn't learn to teach it, and kids three and four don't learn it by listening in. Oh! See, that's the kind of thing that needs to be happening in our classrooms. Not, well, I done seen Mary Sue a-letting Bobby Joe a copy off of her paper there, so, honey, you got a choice. I can put you in 2 days of in-school detention and you'll miss the class time and get zeros for all your work there, or you can come to Daddy's office and let Daddy give you a beating. Perverts. Now, compare that with the experience of the teacher who tried to speak to Bishop Willard Romney. You know, she's a female, first of all. And second of all, she's not a one percenter, so she really didn't have any, well, you know, business talking. This is the account of a teacher who was in a meeting of some sort. A teacher from Colorado describing her experience at a round table with Bishop Willard Romney. He was prattling on about schools failing and how we need vouchers, you know, or who knows, charter, so the public school monies can go to private for-profit schools, right? So here's her experience. In May, Cheryl was asked to participate
when
in
I was
a roundtable with Mitt Romney.
With Mitt Romney, it seemed like a very important thing to me, and I wanted to put a lot of careful thought into what I would say. So I went to the roundtable discussion, very optimistic and interested in hearing what he had to say.
See, that was her mistake. She planned to say something. Now, she's a woman and needs to understand that her role in life is to remain silent around the men, because being born with that Y chromosome makes us menfolk just by definition smarter. Remember, it says there in the book of Galatians or Flip-Floppians or whatever that a woman is to be silent in church, for it is an abomination unto God for a woman to speak in church. Remember? Well, this ain't even church, but they extrapolate that from church to life, you see.
When he sat down, one of the first questions he asked was, he said, I understand there's a teacher here today. Which one of you is the teacher? So I raised my hand thinking, well, that's a good thing. He's interested in education, but it wasn't a good thing. I felt like his view was a little old-fashioned. I was surprised by it. He went on to kind of lecture me about schools and how bad they are. He talked bad about the teachers' union. He was talking about the importance of private schools and voucher systems. At one point, I said to him, I have an answer for that. And he said, I didn't ask you a question. When I think of Mitt Romney, I don't think of a person that could really relate to small-town Craig, Colorado. Although he came here, I don't think that his life experience would allow him to really understand the perspective of people that live in a small town.
You got that? He's asking questions about education, but, of course, Cheryl needs to understand that those are rhetorical questions. They're not meant to be answered. They're like Zen koans that are just supposed to make you ponder on how right the bishop is. Because he's a bishop! Bishops are not challenged. Bishops are not questioned. Bishops are authority, and authority is meant to be expressed, not questioned. That is the danger. And I don't care what flavor religion it is. That is the danger of having a prince of anybody's church within reaching distance of the presidency. He is imbued by his faith with the notion that he is always right. And if he's not sure if he's right, the only people he asks are in Salt Lake City. You see. But a woman dared to tell him that she has an answer for that. I didn't ask you a question. Since we've been time traveling a little bit, anybody here remember when George Bush was working the rope line on the 4th of July? Early on, and he shook somebody's hand, and the guy said, "I think you're a terrible president." And he said, "Who cares what you think?" Yeah. I didn't ask you a question. Are you talking or something? Were you under the impression that I gave a damn what you thought? Onward to Dystopia with a message to me earlier regarding the behavior of the freaks in Boston at the Elizabeth Warren gathering. Isn't this the type of behavior you would expect from teenagers and not adults? No, I disagree. Onward to Dystopia. This is the kind of behavior I would expect from right-wing, proto-brown shirt thugs. That's what I would expect. Yeah. We are halfway through this evening's program, $8 away from meeting September's fundraising goal. And let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Yes.
This is Carol in Las Vegas.
Hey, Carol, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Before I get to kind of my little story, I want to ask you a question. When Mitt Romney talks about his charitable donations, I'm not sure if I'm right about this, but isn't he only really talking about his donations to the Mormon Church?
That is where the vast bulk of his so-called charity goes.
Because I don't consider that a charitable donation. It's sort of like giving to yourself.
Well, those are dues. I mean, Yeah. You don't get, you know, if you don't give all that money to the Mormon Church, you don't get your planet.
Yeah. So I mean,
that's trend. I mean, you know, charity is. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. Charity is supposed to be freely given, and not necessarily for one's own benefit. When one gives to one's religion because one thinks that, oh, I don't know, some monks will chant and sing and light candles and get your ass out of purgatory, or in the bishop's case, will guarantee him his planet. That's transactional in nature. That, Carol, to me, in my mind, is no different from the dollar bill you put in the stripper's garter or the 20 before she does the lap dance. It is transactional.
Well, you know, that's sort of my point. You know, I don't know if anybody remembers. I haven't had regular TV in my home since 2004. But when I'm at work and I'm on break or lunch or whatever, I see the TVs. And when they bring up his charitable donations and the amounts, they just kind of leave it there. You know, it's kind of like, oh, look at what a generous guy is giving, $1 million to charity or something. And, you know, I can't stand it. I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. That's not charity, you know, as is like maybe somebody giving to, you know, the Salvation Army or on and on and on and on, you know. But anyway, I thought I would just, since you brought up George Bush's name a minute ago, George W. Bush's name.
Yeah, sorry.
I'm going to run through a little story here, and I'm going to shorten it just a bit. So it
doesn't take your time, man. Take your time.
But, when I moved right out of high school to Houston, Texas, and again, to make a long story short, I was an athlete in high school and college, blah, blah, blah. And one of the sports I played was tennis. And when I moved to Houston with my parents, even though they didn't have a lot of money, we moved into a very nice apartment complex, which had tournament-level tennis courts. And I would hang around. And they saw how I played, and I kind of got in with this group of guys. And there was a guy who was older, I would say almost 60 years old. He might have been 60, but, you know, playing doubles. he'd obviously played tennis all his life, and he could play pretty well. Well, one day we were playing, and these guys were sitting at a table taking a break. And as I walked up after our little game, and I walked up to the table, I'll never forget this. He was saying, and I kept telling him, quote, I kept telling him, George, look, you can't do these kind of things. It's just too embarrassing to your father, because your father could be president of the United States someday. He was in George H.W. Bush's home talking to George W. Bush about, now you got to remember, this is right in the earliest of the 70s. And he was talking to him about when he got picked up on the road possessing cocaine and he was drunk. Now, I understand you don't know me. The people who are listening to this program don't know me. But
you sound pretty credible in my book.
I will never forget this. And you know, kind of when we, you know, I was younger than all these guys. I mean, I was, you know, I was like 20, 21 years old, 20 years old at the max, in fact. I didn't usually say a whole lot. So when we kind of broke up and walked away, there was one guy who I became very good friends with, who even later was best man at my wedding and all that stuff. So I asked him, I said, you know, Ken, what the hell was he talking about? Was he talking to this person I thought he was talking about? He goes, yeah. He goes, I go, what's the deal? He goes, well, Meade, this guy's name was Meade Evans. So any guy, any NSA guy listening in, that was his name.
Hi, Agent Phil.
Yeah.
Agent so anyway, Fred.
So anyway, you know, I said, does he really have this kind of access to these kind of, well, he said, yeah, he's, you know, he's a member of the River Oaks Country Club, and that's where he knows blah, 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 the Bush is from or whatever. But I just bring it up saying that I have known all my life. So when George W. Bush ran for president, this guy, everything you heard about this guy is true. And being that here's another guy who has gotten in trouble in his life, who's an inherited rich kid, who really has never known responsibility in his entire life, it's sort of like, you know, here we go again. You know what I mean? But if there was any question in anybody's mind, your mind or anybody listening to this program about GW, trust me, everything about that guy is true on the negative, because I will never forget that. And when he ran for president, I'm thinking, here I am listening to this guy saying your father could run for president, who did and won, and then he ended up becoming president. It was just something that was really crazy to me, you know, and after all these years, that's one reason I guess I've always been such a skeptic when it comes to certain people. But, you know, another thing about GW, and this kind of carries over to some other people. For instance, John Boehner, Boner, whatever, and him, you know, being very emotional and crying. And remember when GW would, like, give talks and he'd get emotional and he'd say inappropriate things?
Yeah.
Back in 1987, I was in a pretty bad car accident. I had somebody run a stop sign and T-bone me, and anyway. And I've had some sports injuries and stuff, and I'm fine. You know, I have back pain at times, and I actually do take a medication for it from time to time. It, you know, now that I'm almost 60 years old, you know, some of those old injuries start to act up a little bit. The reason I bring it up is I know a little something about taking painkillers. And I've always recognized in people like GW and like John Boehner and stuff like that, those guys, trust me, and also Rick Perry, remember when he was given that little
talk?
And he was really, really loaded? Trust me, I recognize some of that behavior. Because when you're taking painkillers that are, you know, opiate painkillers, they can make you emotional, they can make you say things. It happens. And I'm telling you right now.
Well, let me ask you this, Carol. Is it a no-brainer? Is Rush Limbaugh a no-brainer for you then?
Oh, absolutely. The thing about Rush Limbaugh was, though, I couldn't believe the amount he was taking. You know, and he was taking, when you're taking OxyContin, which I've never taken, but I know people who have taken them. I know people here in Las Vegas. I know two people that got addicted to those, and they overdosed and they died. So I kind of know the power of those things. But I just wanted to say that when John Boehner starts blurbling and crying in inappropriate times for seeming no reason, I can almost guarantee you he is not only drinking, he's doing some painkillers as well. And I believe that since George W. Bush was this alcoholic until he was in his 40s or whatever, he didn't give up being inebriated. He might have given up alcohol, but trust me, he was, all the time he was president, he was still using something. And if you remember, he was, wherever he would go, do you remember hearing that story when he went to Europe? It got out where he took his own commode.
Yeah, because the CIA couldn't let the royal stool fall into the wrong hands.
Exactly. Well, that seemed pretty obvious to me that they wanted to make sure no one got a hold of his stool or his urine, because it would be pretty easy to do a test on it and find out just what he's taking and the levels he was taking them at. But
well, there were plenty of occasions during his presidency, Carol, when it seemed obvious that he was, he was a few degrees twisted away from reality.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. It, you know, some of the actions, whether it was Rick Perry or John Boehner, I'm sitting there going, no, guys, you don't seem to understand. Those guys are stoned on painkillers. I can guarantee it. But, you know, before I get done with the end of the story, I'm hoping Jim is listening, because this guy, Meade Evans, you know, he didn't work. He would go to, supposedly on business, to New Orleans. And all these years later, after reading a lot of books like Family of Secrets and things like that, that talked about the Bush family, with Jim's background, from what I've heard him talk about on this show, I would have to wonder now if this Meade Evans guy might not have been a person who might have been in some sort of agency or CIA, retired or something like that, because I just can't imagine someone like that, you know, being in that circle and not having some connection.
Well, I mean, look, the Bush family, Carol, made a lot of friends when George was director of the CIA. I mean, we tend to forget that George H.W. Bush was director of the CIA, under Gerald Ford?
Yeah, I believe it was Ford. I believe it was Gerald Ford in the beginning. Yeah, that's when it was. Yeah, a lot of people forget about that. You know, how do you have a president who used to be director of the CIA? But anyway, you know, I just wanted to throw that little story out.
Well, that's fascinating. And, you know, some people think that maybe I'm kidding. I've had a couple of occasions where I've had, you know, my guts have gone sideways, and I've wound up drinking water and thin soup for 2 weeks. It's a hell of a diet. And about the only relief you get is because they give you this big-ass bottle of pain pills, because it kind of makes you stupid, and they dose you up enough that you kind of sleep most of it away, so you're not sitting around with your belly rumbling. And, you know, I've stayed away from the microphone then, because I made a promise when I came back to radio in 2003 that I would not do impaired radio. And with the occasional lapse of opening a beer toward the end of the program, I've kept to that. But I will not get behind the microphone with a belly full of hydro, oxy, anything, codone, morphine, yada yada yada, because I know that when you open your mouth with that stuff going through your system, sometimes bats fly out.
Well, then I would tend to think that you probably agree with me that when you've seen, like, G.W. Bush talk at times, or Rick Perry or John Boehner, if you know, unfortunately you've had the occasion where you've had to take something like a oxycodone or whatever, don't you agree with me?
Oh, I do. I mean, I've got this clip right here Now, granted, I monkeyed with it, but I don't even need to play it. But, you know, I'm the decider.
Yeah.
Bring him on. Or my personal favorite, I met this guy at the Cleveland airport, and he said, I grow onions, and you got to help me find people to, you know, pluck them. Now, it sounded drunk enough to start with that I went on and played with it. Here, this is it. I played with it in one of the audio applications we have here, and it turned into this.
There are some who feel like that, you know, the conditions are such that they can attack us there. My answer is bring them on.
Now, I made him sound drunker than he was.
Yeah, I remember him saying that.
But the thing is, the only reason I did that was because he sounded loaded to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a lot of talk during the Bush administration, Carol, about the fact that we were pretty sure, and it started with a book called Bush on the Couch. I can't remember the author. Somebody will tell me in a minute. But the thesis of Bush on the Couch was that he was a mentally damaged, dry drunk.
Mm-hmm.
He was a drunk who had never had any help getting sober, because you don't just get sober. Very few people do.
Mm-hmm.
And that accounted for some of his weirdnesses. But there were a lot of us who thought that, nah, you know, he's getting a little, you know, he's doing a little better living through chemistry along the way too. But I say all that as preface, Carol, because what I'm worried about now is, and I'm one of, look, last night's Monday Night Football game kind of proved to us that it ain't even over when it's over. You know, Yogi Berra famously said it ain't over till it's over. Well, last night we learned that it ain't over when it's over. And I refuse to count Bishop Willard Romney out. And here's the part that scares me witless. I don't think dude's on any pharmaceuticals. I think dude is stone cold sober and meaner than a baby snake. You know, they always say that baby rattlesnakes are the worst kind of bites, because they don't know they don't have any control of how much poison they're pumping into you. They just let it all go. And this guy is stone cold sober, mean as a baby rattler, and you know, thinks that we all just need to sit down and shut up, and his wife is 10 times worse. You know, don't you people realize how lucky you are that Mitt is running for the presidency so he can maybe fix this country that you people have screwed up with that Negro?
Well, I agree with you that, you know, when I said about inherited rich kids, I don't suspect that Romney is using any type of drug or even alcohol. I agree with you of that.
No, but the best thing that could probably happen to Willard Romney is if somebody would just somehow or another pump a little cannabis smoke into wherever he was, so he'd mellow out and go, oh, wow, now I get it. Oh, I'm such an ass.
No, I do agree. But his danger is that he has lived a life that none of us can even really imagine. He can, it even shows with his wife that, you know, they're the same. They're a good duo. I mean, they are so elitist. You know, when the Republicans talk about elitist and stuff like that, I mean, what a better example of elitist people that are out of touch than, you know, Mitt Romney and Ann Romney. And the danger with him is that he has no realistic life experience. He knows nothing. He's a draft dodger. He's a coward. But he has been a CEO and a powerful corporate man for so long that he just thinks that he's a king. And that's how he acts. And I think it's pretty obvious there.
I think so. And by the way, I was just told by our buddy Harry that the author of Bush on the Couch is Justin Frank. Harry tells me he's a psychiatrist who teaches at George Washington University Medical School in D.C., and he says Dr. Frank's conclusions still give me the creeps. And for those of us who read it, yeah.
No, I actually did read some of that book. It's been a while ago, but it was an interesting read in a lot of ways, in that it's obvious that G.W. was, you know, we're all damaged to a certain point at certain things in our life, but UW was, you know, severely damaged in many, many ways. I mean, you know, how can you not be severely damaged when you have a mother like, you know, he grew up with?
Well, he was potty trained at gunpoint. You're a very dirty boy, Georgie. Yeah. I mean, what do you say about a pair of parents who bury their infant daughter and then head off to the country club?
Exactly. That.
I mean, I've had people say, well, you know, Bob, you're not being very nice. You know, people deal with grief in different ways, and I'm in complete agreement. But I have never known anybody dealing with grief by going and playing around.
Well, not the very next day, you know. I mean,
day of, Carol.
Oh,
day
that's
of.
Right. That's right. It was
last spadeful of dirt for.
You know, that is chilling. I do remember that, and I will never forget when I first heard about that. I thought to myself, there is something very, very strange going on here. I can't, you know, as someone who, you know, my grandparents grew up, I grew up with, in my home, my grandparents were in the home, and one pair of them, and then my parents. And, you know, over the years, I've buried them all. And I can't imagine. Now, I will say, any of us that have had loved ones who've had cancer or some sort of lingering death, at that point, sometimes it can be a relief in some ways, but you're still not yourself. You still don't go out and say, well, gee, I'm going to play tennis or a round of golf or, you know, let's go out and play roulette. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. It really, really is, you know. And I think
I mean, you know, is this the point in the program where we remind folks of the litany of the hatefulness of Barbara Bush, asked about the potential body count in Iraq, and why would I want to trouble my beautiful mind with that? Or after Katrina saying, well, my only worry about these Negroes in Houston is that they're going to like it here, sleeping on their little cots in the Astrodome.
Well, absolutely, and I don't really see where you can draw much of a difference between Ann Romney and Barbara Bush at all.
I think they're probably two peas in a pod.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think that in some ways, as much as I dislike George H.W. Bush, you know,
she allowed. I mean, come on, Ann Romney allowed Willard to baptize baptize either her father or grandfather, who expressly said he wanted no part of that stuff. I mean, he said it. It's documentable. Go look it up.
No, I do remember that.
And they dead baptized him anyway.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, to change subject just a little bit, let me ask you a question. What at this point of the campaign, how much do you feel there might be a situation where the people around Romney are still going to steal this election?
I'm scared to death of it, Carol. I'm scared to death of it because anytime you are within the statistical margin of error, then you are within stealing distance of an election. I mean, we should establish that as some sort of axiomatic law of American voting.
Well, I agree, and I think that, you know, when you look at the polls in certain areas, like I was shocked to see in Wisconsin, Obama was ahead like 14 points. You know, and when you look at not just the polls on blacks or Hispanics or women or whatever, and he's so much ahead. But then you see on TV these supposedly the national poll, and it's even. And I'm very suspicious that they keep saying that to try to keep it in people's heads that it's close, even though it's not, you know.
But we have to understand that they keep using the national polls because the national polls create the sense of the horse race, and as long as the, I mean, this is economic, okay? This is a matter of how can I put this? I'm struggling. They've got to have the horse race. They've got to have that 47 to 51 or 47 to 49, and they've got to have those precious undecideds out there, those people who apparently crawl every 4 years, crawl out from under a bell jar at Ripley's Believe It or Not Auditorium, who don't live in the world, who, I don't know. They've got to focus on that, because that's what makes the Sheldon Adelsons and the rest of these hideous, obscenely wealthy parasites pump money into the election, and this is wealth transference, okay? And the wealth is transferred from the wallet of Sheldon Adelson and the rest of these punk ass bastards, and those of us who give $3 and $5 and $10 and $15 and $20. Campaign fundraising is very much another regressive tax upon the American people, but it flows into the election pipeline, and it's a straight pipe, okay? It goes into the war chest and comes out of the war chest and goes into the for-profit media, and the for-profit media every 4 years gets a win, well, every 2 years gets a windfall, and every 4 years it's huge, and it's only getting bigger. So the for-profit media have this massive conflict of interest, if there were anything such as anything resembling journalistic ethics inside the for-profit media, which there ain't, so that they've got a vested conflict of interest in making sure that it looks like it's going to be a close race, because if it's not a close race, the Repiglicans they stop spending the money, the pipeline goes empty, and they don't get their windfall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is capitalism 101 as applied to American elections.
I agree with you, but there's also that other thing, like you said, where if they can't make it, keep it close, or at least say it's close, you know, if we go into election day and Obama is ahead by, let's say, 9 points overall, and then Romney wins by a point and a half, you know, it makes it a lot more suspicious, you know, than if they can somehow artificially keep it, pretend that it's close.
Right, but also if it's a horse race going into election day, then, I mean, that's why I referenced the margin of error. If it's a horse race going into election day, they can say, well, you know, people just changed their minds.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, if there's a 14-point gap, I mean, did anybody think that there was going to be some sort of late-breaking miracle that would give us a grumpy old man Mussolini as president and vice president in 2008, I think we were all pretty confident that it was gonna go Obama's way, weren't we?
Yeah, pretty much.
So, you see my point. It's gotta at least have some sort of passing resemblance to being a close race, or else they can't steal it.
Well, you know, unfortunately, we have the Wisconsin recall, where I think that was stolen myself. I don't believe those stories where people, you know, voted for Scott Walker because they didn't like the fact of a recall. I think that's all nonsense. I think the machines were at work there big time. Don't you?
I wouldn't be surprised if they were. I mean, I don't. And look, I mean, we've got what's her name, Nicholas, there in that county, who in the Supreme Court race suddenly found a whole box of, you know, uncounted ballots. Well, howdy-do. Remember that?
Yep. Well,
and frankly, Carol, every election in this country will continue to be suspect as long as we're voting on video games. I have about as much confidence in my vote being counted this November as I do that it would be counted properly if I did it on my son's video game platform.
All right. No, I totally agree.
I think there's probably really more electoral integrity in the voting for American Idol than there is in these corporate-owned the voting machines.
I totally agree. Well, I don't want to take too much of your time, but the one thing I will say is, even if you meet the fundraising goal for September in the next today or tomorrow, whatever, I wouldn't give up talking about mentioning fundraising. You know, that's just my suggestion.
Well, I thank you for that, Carol. In fact, we did just get over the hump.
But the Dutch. it doesn't hurt to start the next month a little ahead of the game either, too.
You know what? That's true. I just figure, I mean, I don't get a lot of pushback, but I get a few emails now and then say, you know, why are you constantly talking about raising money? And I've tried to make it abundantly clear that the reason I have to talk about it is because when I don't talk about it, nobody contributes, and if nobody contributes, there's no horn.
Well, yeah, and then since unfortunately the supposedly liberal elites that have money don't tend to support anything like our friends on the other side.
Oh no, we still don't get it. And, you know, we could, one of the things I would love to have sometime is this huge roundtable of a lot of us who are independently trying to make this go, some for longer than others. But, you know, people like Sam Cedar, people like me, you know, people who aren't necessarily getting a direct paycheck from somebody else in order to keep all of this going, folks like Malloy. Rick Smith, I can't say enough good things about Rick Smith. Rick is the future of progressive radio, and he needs a lot more love than he gets. But all those of us who are trying to survive and try to put our brains together and figure out a way where we can all put, you know, progressive values to the fore. And make sure everybody is doing the right, is doing what they need to be doing. And because I believe this medium is incredibly valuable, and I don't know of anybody that needs to not be in this, that is in this. We don't need less; we need more people doing this.
Well, you know, one thing that's a little strange to me, being here in Las Vegas, about, I don't know, 9 years ago, 10 years ago, 8 years ago, whatever it was, back when, now I'm going to have a brain fart. Matt Damon's buddy in the movie business.
Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck. Well, my CRS is kicking in. I'm getting close to 60 here. But anyway, Ben Affleck used to come before he met Jennifer Lopez and, you know, made him kind of a cheaper guy. He used to play at the Hard Rock. I'm not going to say where I work, but I never have worked at the Hard Rock. But I had friends there. And Ben Affleck, you know, liked to have a good time, and sometimes he might get up several hundred thousand dollars, and it'd be nothing for him to just take $100,000 of that win and just throw it into the dealers, which is a very generous guy. You know, dealers work for tips.
Sure.
But I've never understood where someone like Ben Affleck, or there's many other movie stars who are supposedly left leaning. They could write a check for $100,000 and never think about it.
Yeah, and see, that's without going into great details. I know stories, and then I know my own experiences, and I know the experiences of, for instance, our dear friend Guy James. There are stories that I've heard. This I don't know directly, but some of those, you know, some of those pitches have been made to some of those so-called Hollywood liberals, and they, oh yeah, I love it, man, it's a great idea, yeah, wonderful, wonderful, oh cool, I'll talk to you Monday. Beep.
And you never hear from them again.
Nope.
Gosh. You know, because as much as this is a terrible thing to say, but it's true. As much as I hate the right wing, and I do hate them, it even scares me sometimes how much I hate them, but you almost got to give some of them credit, because some of those guys do write checks, and they write checks to programs that put these right wing nutcases on and keep them on.
Sure.
You know?
Because they understand the value of the medium. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why I was saying about Rick Smith. Rick Smith needs to be the coast to coast. And he needs to, and he works beautifully inside the medium of terrestrial radio. I understand. I know what my niche is, Carol. It would be a challenge. I could do it. I've done it before. But it would be a challenge to put me on terrestrial radio, because not because I like to say booger a lot, but, or anybody would be having to tap dance on the delay button, but because I'm what we've just done for for however long we've been talking is impossible on terrestrial radio.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And I don't know if we'll ever have an audience of a million. I don't know if we'll ever have an audience of 250,000. But the important thing is that what we're doing here is meeting a desire. I'm not so egomaniacal as to say a need, but we are meeting a desire. We are answering a call of some sort. And to that end, if you know, the whole dream of the horn all along was to create an online radio network where we could have a bunch of hosts, all of whom would get paid. You know, not loads of money, but would get paid. You know, make the rent, make the car payment, make the utilities. Well, that never materialized.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't materialized for me either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that put the horn in kind of a corner over the last few months is that some of the things that I do that bring in extra income went away. And so, you know, the shortfalls that I would put our money into to make up when we didn't make the monthly fundraising goal, that's no longer possible.
Well, you know, I know what you mean. Like I say, I still got a job, and, you know, I can...
Yeah, and if I ever do say on air, hey, I'm going out to Vegas, you can write to me privately, and you know, I'll come say hi.
All right. Okay. But I'm just saying, you know, I guess I'm still one of the lucky ones, even though my income's down about 38%. But so I know how you feel. But anyway, you know, don't stop talking about that. And if you happen to talk to Jim, you might just ask him, gee, do you think someone who wasn't a family member that has access to George H.W. Bush's home was probably a spy?
Well, you may very well have just asked him that yourself.
Right.
You may have conjured him. I don't know. Carol, it's awful good hearing from you. It really is. I love our conversations.
All right. Well, take it easy, and I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
It's our buddy Carol calling from Vegas. And, you know, that he's the first person to say, no, Bob, don't shut up. So, y'all want to opine on this? You want to chime in on this? How important is it to have a few shows where I say nothing about fundraising? Or would you rather see us try to get ahead? That's your call. In answer to Onward to Dystopia, he says, so you mean you're not getting any of the George Soros money, Bob? Yeah, that's what I mean. I would love it. I imagine what falls into the Soros Foundation sofa cushions in between them would probably keep the horn going for 5 years. And I still have that dream. I'd like to, because I think I probably could. If I picked up the phone and I called some of the old hosts from the horn and I said, guys, it's finally happened. And by the way, these are calls that are going to be made if we ever, well, you know, get some sort of a windfall. You know, we can make sure that everybody has a living wage. Then you know what? It would be almost overnight that we would be providing more liberal progressive content than any other single source provider in the country. That's how fast it could happen. Isaac with an email. That was a good conversation with Carol. Good radio. Thank you, Isaac. Thank you. So, you know, chime in. Should we try to get ahead? Should we try to get a leg up on October? Or should I shut up for a few days and start on October 1st? It's your call. And there will be no electronic balloting in this. Yes, there will be. It's all going to be email or your phone calls or whatever. Waggy in the chat room, I vote to keep fundraising at least until we're a month or three ahead. Stockton Larry says, I concur, even if you win the lotto, Bob, you should ask people to invest. A lot of good words coming in the chat room for Rick Smith. If you have never listened to Rick Smith, you really should. I realize that Rick coming on at 9 p.m. after me on the horn I realize that many of you may go listen to Malloy. And, you know, I listened to two shows at one time. They kind of meet in the middle of my brain and explode. Just because you can't listen at 9 p.m. doesn't mean you can't give a listen. I have yet to hear anybody who has listened to Rick Smith say that he is not everything I've described him to be. He is worth your time and worth your effort. And catch his podcast. It's over at whiterosesociety.org, too. So just take that into account. Listen, I'm going to take a quick break. We haven't had one since the beginning of the show. We'll take a quick break. It's Tuesday. That means it's time for the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I just won't miss those. And we'll take that and come back to your calls. You know the lines are open, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. And, of course, if you don't need us to pay the toll-free freight, 304-658-3333. This is progressive conversation radio that you create. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, September 25, 2012.
If the Republicans take over the Senate, Jim Inhofe would become the person who would be in charge of the committee that oversees the Environmental Protection Agency.
Elizabeth Warren's Senate campaign about more than Cherokee heritage. Breaking news, study shows Fox News misleads on climate. Also, sun rises in east. Plus,
spokesman for the chemical industry, Dr. Robert White Stevens.
The major claims in Miss Rachel Carson's book, Silent Spring, are gross distortions of the actual facts.
Marking major milestones, Silent Spring, and saving the planet by saving the ozone layer.
All of those strange accents and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
He is going to export millions of jobs to China by destroying low-cost electricity in this country for no environmental benefit.
Oh, is someone's feelings hurt that their dirty coal isn't selling anymore, Murray Energy CEO Robert Murray? Oh, this is your Green News Report.
Okay, Des, this guy, Robert Murray of Murray Energy, the CEO, is unbelievable what he was saying in his rant today on Fox News. Here's a little bit more.
This man is destroying the economy of the United States of America just to placate his constituents in the radical environmental movement, unionists, elitists, and so forth.
And so forth.
Yeah, pay no attention to the hundreds of thousands of lives that are saved each year by air pollution regulations that pull back toxic coal.
This is the same guy who actually mandated, but didn't force, that's his own quote, his own workers to take a day off of work to be a backdrop for a Mitt Romney campaign commercial.
Without pay.
Slave labor. And this guy's worried about destroying the economy. Good Lord. All right. What do you have for us back in the world of reality, Desi Doyen?
Oh, well, not sure how much reality can be found in this election season, but in the Massachusetts Senate race debate last week, Republican Senator Scott Brown acknowledged he believes the science on climate change, mostly, but still supports billions in taxpayer oil subsidies.
Can we start calling those entitlements?
Good idea. Yes, we should. Meanwhile, his Democratic challenger, Elizabeth Warren, says that money should go to build America's clean energy industry. She also knows it's about more than just Massachusetts. In fact, it's about control of the Senate and putting Republican Senator James Inhofe of Oklahoma in charge of the Senate Environment Committee.
He's a man who has called global warming a hoax. In fact, that's the title of his book. A man like that should not be in charge of the Environmental Protection Agency overseeing their work.
And Senator Inhofe even attacks the U.S. military for its research into alternative energy.
Why does Jim Inhofe hate our troops?
Strong positions on climate change science appeal to voters, too. A new poll shows that the small segment of undecided voters, about 7 to 10% of likely voters, say they want to hear the candidates talk more about climate change and clean energy. The new poll from the Yale Project on Climate Communication indicates a majority of undecided voters actually agree with the scientific consensus, suggesting that a candidate's position on climate change could be a decisive issue in these races. But not if voters can't get accurate information on climate issues.
We are talking about climate change. Is it settled science?
Of course it's not settled science. It's deep, deep in dispute.
Surprise! The biggest liars about climate on the media are Fox News Channel and the Wall Street Journal, both owned by Rupert Murdoch. A new study from the Union of Concerned Scientists examined coverage of climate change at Fox News and the Wall Street Journal over a six-month period and found that Fox News misleads its viewers on climate change 93% of the time. While the Wall Street Journal misleads over 80% of the time. Finally, Sunday marked the 25th anniversary of the first ever global climate treaty that actually saved the world, the 1987 Montreal Protocol that phased out the use of chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs, in air conditioning and aerosols. Chemical industry giants like Dow and DuPont claimed a phase-out of CFCs would cause economic Armageddon, and they attacked both the scientific evidence and the scientists. Does that sound familiar?
Sounds very familiar.
Republican President Ronald Reagan signed that treaty, and now the ozone layer has been saved. If we hadn't acted, most of the ozone layer would have been gone by 2050. This weekend also marks the 50th anniversary of Rachel Carson's landmark book, Silent Spring, exposing the deadly toxic impacts of the post-war world of dangerous pesticides. Back then, the powerful pesticide industry also warned of economic Armageddon, as heard in this 1962 CBS documentary.
If man were to faithfully follow the teachings of Miss Carson, we would return to the Dark Ages. And the insects and diseases and vermin would once again inherit the earth.
Oh, my. Once again, inherit the earth.
Rachel Carson never survived to see the legacy of her work, like the creation of the EPA and pesticide regulations, and the saving of the American bald eagle from extinction. And the pesticide industry still vilifies Rachel Carson.
Same phony complaints, different accent. For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
It's still the same old story, a fight for love and glory, a case of do or die. The world will always welcome love. As time goes by.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Titanic Tuesday on The Horn. The voting seems to be brisk, both brisk and largely one-sided. Just to let you know where people's minds are, let's see here. Jay, writing in, says, keep talking about the need to contribute. Simply put. Robert. Phase 5 in Australia, who has been responsible for a number of challenges and a number of, he's been responsible for a lot of keeping the horn going, as have all of you, but Robert has initiated a good bit, says, ask for money at the top of every hour, even when the month's total has been reached. Ask people to set a day each month to make a donation of whatever amount, $5, $10. And doing it each month, you can plan ahead so you don't go without anything you need. Put a reminder on your computer's calendar. I have one set for the 20th of each month. And yes, I'd like to see the horn 3 to 6 months ahead on its fundraising. Then you can replace some of the gear you need to replace. So don't stop fundraising. That from Robert, phase 5 from the chat room. And there's much truth in what Robert says. I mean, frankly, we still have not replaced the losses from the great big Belgian bastard the backpack heist. From back in May. Just haven't been able to. And there is equipment that is wearing out. Yeah. Then Darlene, also a frequent, it goes beyond supporter. All of you make it possible. You simply make it possible for this to continue. Darlene says, keep on fundraising. I don't see where you're asking for contributions takes all that much time or should be viewed as an issue. I have to question and wonder about those listeners who are complaining. So keep fundraising, Bob, and I'm donating $50 towards October to show I mean it. Hope your other listeners do the same. And she did. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you very kindly. So that's and there's been a lot of commentary in the chat room as well, so that's the present thinking. It is 24 minutes past the hour, and we will go, at this point, straightway back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim. You were conjured.
Well, beware of that, because you know what happened to King Saul when he conjured the witch of Endor.
Well, yes. But, you know, it's not October yet, but, I mean, we can start thinking conjuring stuff. I mean, you know. It's...
Well, I mean, you know, precaution is the mother of accountability, right?
True indeed.
Well, that's straight from Ambrose Bierce, the Devil's Dictionary. Now, which question was I conjured for?
You were conjured by Carol over the issue of whether or not somebody with close enough connections to be taking young George W. to task about being a little coke freak and stuff might have some sort of intergovernmental agency connections to, you know, get him in that close. That's what Carol was talking about.
You mean the CIA?
Yeah, the company.
Bob, that's something that's... let me put it this way. It's very hard to speak about because the CIA works in mysterious ways. It's wondrous to behold.
And they mean it to stay that way, right?
Well, yes, and I have the greatest respect for the CIA and a number of the things that it has accomplished ever since it transitioned from being OSS to CIA.
Yeah, they've had their stumbles along the way. The coup against Mohammed Mossadegh, the action in Guatemala, you know, the Allende.
Unfortunately, that is the business of government, and it can't always be clean. And it has been questionable. And as far as connections between HW, the only thing I can say about HW is, to tell you the truth, compared to W, I liked him a lot.
Compared to, well, I can say that about a lot of people.
Well, as far as W is concerned, I told you in the email, he'd have been a great driver's ed teacher, particularly when he knew how to drive straight into plate glass windows, particularly where you live.
Yeah, I was thinking when I saw that from you, Jim, I was thinking either that or a Hollywood stuntman.
Well, I don't know, but I don't think that was the case. But there's a great deal of difference between the father and the son. And as far as the family background of the Bush family, I've read Kitty Kelly's book. I enjoy it. Anyone who has not read the book by Kitty Kelly about the Bush family, to read it. And, of course, Kitty Kelly is pretty much a right-on piece of work because she's never been sued and she always has the facts straight.
Yeah, and that's the telling thing. They really didn't sue her.
Kitty has never been sued. If you've ever looked at her workroom, there are huge stacks of files, and I mean paper files, inside, you know, envelopes and things of that nature, or dividers, in which she does her work very carefully. She's a native Washingtonian. She understands how things in the Beltway works. And she is very credible, and some of the things she has to say about the Bush family aren't too complimentary,
to say the very least.
But as far as CIA is concerned, every nation in the world has its own version of the CIA. The British have either MI5 or MI6. I forget which is which. Those days are gone.
The French have what? Quai d'Orsay?
There's the M Bureau.
Yeah, but I mean, they're at Quai d'Orsay.
I think the Quai d'Orsay is the Foreign Office, and the Jersey M Bureau is the Secret Service and things of that nature. You know, people who have to look under the rug and look behind the curtains. And
you know, I always found it fascinating that when the Cubans wanted to introduce a cigar, Jim, that would be crafted especially for the French palate and the French market. You know what they named that cigar? I mean, everybody knows about H. Upman and Partagas, you know, anybody who knows cigars. But when they wanted to come up with a cigar specifically for the French market, they named it Quai d'Orsay.
Well, why not? It's a good marketing tool.
Yeah.
You know, why not? I mean, Quai d'Orsay is a very reputable organization of the French government. It does the work. It's been...
Well, in many ways, didn't the French invent diplomacy?
Well,
at least as we understand it.
Let me put it this way. French is the more accurate of any language I know. Therefore, it could lend itself to being one of the pillars of democratic action, because French is very accurate.
Well, you know, it's interesting you would say that, though, because going back to, I told everyone I was rereading Barbara Tuchman's A Distant Mirror, and one of the things that prevented the achievement of a peace during the Hundred Years' War, toward the end of it, was that the English, and this was borne out in a BBC documentary, or maybe it wasn't BBC, but it was called The Adventure of English, and in both instances, it was pointed out that toward the end of the Hundred Years' War, because English had become the language of England, and French had previously been, the English were no longer good enough at French to feel comfortable with it, and they felt like that the French diplomats were writing shifty things into proposed treaties that that would be written in such a way that they could then turn around and go and break them and feel good about it.
Well, I mean, that's the purpose of diplomacy, is to be able to give yourself an out, and that's the purpose of that. And of course, I think sometimes the English were purposely mistrustful.
Yeah.
Diplomatic language. I mean, when Henry VIII was on the throne of England, he was, always bouncing between Charles V and Francis and, one or the other. And, of course, they all knew what Henry was trying to do. He was trying to break away from the Church of Rome and always trying to establish himself as the titular head of the English Church. And, there were some serious difficulties there. Of course, when even Henry sent his sister to marry the King of Portugal, who was, God only knows, older than God himself, all of a sudden the old man died mysteriously. But, I mean, English politics have been always kind of turned around, and the French probably could take a page book from theirs, but I have a great deal of admiration for the French.
Well, in terms of diplomacy, I'm trying to think, the first State Department budget, and James Madison, was he not the first Secretary of State? It seems like the first budget for the first spying budget, for lack of a better term, was something around $300. How far we have come, huh?
Oh yeah.
And I mention all of this because of the huge kerfuffle, and of course it's a manufactured outrage, outcry by the right wing over President Obama's remarks at the UN today, and the fact that we didn't get up and follow our Israeli masters out, walking out on Ahmadinejad. Jim, these people want a war so bad that they're biting the insides of their own mouths just to taste the blood.
Well, I think they might find that particular item on the menu rather distasteful.
I think they like it.
I had trouble following Ahmadinejad in his hour-long discourse with the CNN reporter who interviewed him, and how Ahmadinejad would basically contradict himself. And, of course, maybe this has to do with the fact that Ahmadinejad realizes that perhaps his influence in Iran is becoming eroded by the Ayatollahs, because, I don't know.
I think he's president of Iran at sufferance at this point in time.
Oh, yeah, we've talked about that before, how he serves basically at the pleasure of the Ayatollahs and the Islamic head of the Iranian people. And he says some very bombastic things that I can't accept.
I think he has to say those things.
I don't know if he has to say them or not. I don't know if he is doing the same thing that perhaps some of the other leaders you've been talking about have done. You know, there are a lot of people who get up there and who talk about this, that, and the other, and they make these bombastic statements, and then they have to try to hedge their bets and come back and say, well, I didn't mean this or I didn't mean that. And I think he falls in that category. He's a very dangerous man. And he's very dangerous.
Well, I think he's a dangerous man to the extent that there's a lot of dangerous men over there. I don't think he is a nickel's more dangerous than Benjamin Netanyahu is, for instance. Because Ahmadinejad is not sitting on an arsenal of some 200 at least nuclear devices ready to go.
Well, I think he realizes that. And I think he realizes that his dreams have exceeded his powers. And that if he, in fact, tries some type of problem with Israel or things of that nature, the Israelis, given their history, one thing I'll have to say for them, basically, when you tweak their nose, you better be prepared for a great big pushback. I mean, look at the 72 Olympics.
Yeah.
I can't blame them. I cannot blame them.
Oh, I don't blame them for that or the raid on Entebbe, okay?
Oh, of course. I mean, look at Idi Amin. I mean,
But I do blame them for raining white phosphorus munitions down on civilian populations in Gaza, which they did. The so-called dime munitions that they have used, again, against civilian populations in Gaza. This ad, I don't know, I ran it one night, I don't know if you were listening or not, this ad from Benjamin Netanyahu that's been running, curiously enough, in the Florida market, calling for Barack Obama to launch an attack on Iran. I darn sure blame him for that, because he's a head of state of another country. What business does he have on our public airwaves telling the American president what to do?
Why do you think?
I know the answer. The check cleared.
Well, a little hush money can do a lot of talking, Bob. And that's the world of reality. That's the world of real politics. And I hope that Mr. Netanyahu will realize that. Of course he realizes it, because he's a master player in that game. And realizing exactly what would happen if, in fact, there is some type of conflagration with Iran. And there are other players in this game.
Well, I mean, and you know what? There are other players, Jim, and I know that your heart lays with many of them, insofar as there are players in this game who will be given orders to march or to sail or to fly or to jump, and they will follow those orders because they have been conditioned and sworn to follow them.
They have to.
But they seem not to be within, as if they ever are, Jim, they seem not to be within this calculus. You know, we have laws against supposedly foreign powers contributing money to our political campaigns. But what if? But this ad that ran in Florida from Netanyahu, what is that if it is not a Romney ad? You know, this is a guy who was literally a business partner of Bishop Willard Romney in his youth back in Boston. I mean, they're pals, they're old buddies, they're old money grubbing cronies.
Bob, in the history of this country, diplomacy always has its roots that go way, way, way back. And people forget about those roots, or they don't know about them. And of course, when the organism sprouts out of the earth, they say, whoa, 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 what's this? Well, if you just read a little history, you'll understand exactly the connections that go back. I mean, that's the way I look at it. And as far as the military is concerned, I mean, we got to realize one thing. They don't practice democracy. There is not a democratic institution. It never will be, and it cannot function as such. I mean, even Rommel realized that. Even when he became totally aware of what Adolf Hitler was doing. Even he had his problems with violating his oath to the Fuhrer.
You know, you mentioned the other night that you own Downfall.
Yeah, I do.
And that movie is available on a view on demand basis on Netflix now. Mm-hmm. And so I sat down and watched a little bit of the front end of it last night. This is not.
Oh,
I've watched the whole thing in the past. This is not to say that.
Okay. Okay.
That you know, last night just happened to be, you know, Nazi Germany night at the Kincaid House, but Agnes was doing something else, and we were going to watch a movie together at the end of the day. But she was on the phone with our daughter talking to the grandchildren and stuff. So I just ran across. And I watched two things. I watched a big chunk of Triumph of the Will, and I watched the opening scenes of Downfall. And to see people like Himmler trying to get away from the sinking ship and make their separate deals. And, you know, and there's that line where Himmler says, yeah, listen, all I'll need is that, you know, do I shake his hand, do I shake Eisenhower's hand, or do I give him the Nazi salute? You know, give me an hour with him and I'll have a deal.
Well, it didn't quite work, did he? Because, number one,
he wound up dancing.
Well, yeah, he did. He danced at the, he danced on the floor of wherever it was where he had to bite into the sign and caps it.
No, that's right. Yeah, Himmler didn't dance. Himmler just died.
No.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
All is concerned. Downfall, that movie... Well, Triumph of the Will is a good lesson as far as how one man can take power the way Adolf Hitler did and how beguiling his movement was with the movements, with the flags, with the searchlights and the repeated lies and the repeated...
Well, you know, I saw that opening scene of Triumph of the Will with the airplane.
And I can't think of any piece of cinematography that could have been better... staged.
No, I agree with you, but you know where my mind immediately went, don't you?
Tell me.
Because these right-wing bastards, you know, fascists are always fascists. And my mind immediately went to that scene of the heroic George W. Bush in his plane flying onto the deck of the carrier USS Lincoln, which had been positioned conveniently to keep from showing San Diego Harbor in the freaking background, and climbing out of his plane with his parachute on and his crotch all stuffed. And I thought, my God, whoever set this up has sat and watched Triumph of the Will more times than I've seen Blazing Saddles.
Well, I think their lessons were well learned from Triumph of the Will.
But the thing is, you and I don't. If we were big shots saying this in the big time for profit media, we'd be out of a job for that, Jim. Because you know we're progressive liberal type people, and we're not allowed to say that about them, even when we catch them red handed using their tactics.
Well, there's a great deal of truth in what you say, and a great deal of veracity in the thought that comes behind your words. But I'm simply looking at, you know, the elements of history of that film, The Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl, and then, of course, Downfall, when you see the lessons learned about the last days of an adventurer conqueror like Adolf Hitler, a mass murderer. But yet, when the movie opens, he's interviewing a secretary.
Yeah.
His headquarters and the Luftwaffe. Remember that? That's how he start. This film starts.
And I don't know what else. I don't know what else the actor who played him has done, but it is obvious that he is a German equivalent of a. He struck me as a German equivalent of a Sir Alec Guinness, or
marvelous job. As a matter of fact, Sir Alec Guinness did a marvelous job playing Hitler himself in the last 10 days.
Well, that's why I used Sir Alec Guinness in the first place.
Absolutely. And, of course, you know, to Hitler's inner circle and his secretaries and the people who were his underlings, because, you know, Hitler always preferred the company of the people who were from his class. He never could really be comfortable with the Prussian aristocracy.
Oh no! He was completely ill at ease with the Junkers,
or his generals, or people like that. And you know, it is an example of what happens to people like Adolf Hitler, who plunged the world into a Second World War, costing the lives of 50 million people, 6 million of whom were exterminated upon his verbal orders. At so many camps throughout Europe. And, you know, here's the man 5 years before, in June of 1940, was at the top of his game, driving through the streets of Paris, looking at La Madeleine, the beautiful church there at the end of the Rue Royale.
Yeah, he got to go to Paris, unlike the Kaiser.
He, then, of course, Ian Spear and Miss Arno Brecker, his sculptor, did. And, you know, he was at the top of this game. And if you play his cards right, he could have well damn well won.
Yeah, I love speculative fiction. And for that reason, I love that I love that film that Rutger Hauer did. Do you remember that?
It's called Fatherland.
Yes, that is it. And it's a brilliant little piece of filmmaking.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But, you know, Hitler did not... How can I say this? Hitler was not crazy. He was stupid. He was stupid in his strategic decisions.
And you know, well, that, and that...
He was even stupid in his plans to rebuild Germania, because his architects were testing, saying, you know, it will not support the big Congress Hall, the sandy soil of Berlin. It will not support this huge...
Yeah, there was that science thingy getting in the way of ideology. And you know, the reason I think we verged into this realm, Jim, is because I am very much ill at ease with saying that, for instance, somebody like Mahmoud Ahmadinejad is just crazy.
No, he's not crazy. He's just being stupid in some of the stuff he says. I mean, he does not need to tweak the nose of Israel, which really needs.
Or as the metaphor that I have used with regard to, for instance, making movies deliberately provoking the semi-literate poor of places like Pakistan, Libya, and Egypt. You do not walk up and whack a hornet's nest with a sharp stick to see if hornets behave the way they have behaved every time their nest has been whacked from time immemorial. And you don't whack the lunatic hornet's nest in Israel either.
Well, true. And look at what has happened in the Middle East since the Arab Spring. I mean, that whole area has become destabilized.
The whole area is a forest with low hanging hornet's nest, and idiots walking around blindfolded with sharp sticks, just swinging like it's a birthday party with pinatas, and the pinatas have freaking hornets in them.
Or if you want to go back to Barbara Tuchman, when she said in The Guns of August, the Kaiser walking around in a room filled with gunpowder with a lighted cigarette. You don't do that.
Yeah.
Just crazy. And what really worries me about the Iran situation, and I'm just being totally apolitical, not apolitical, but totally practical here. When you've got somebody like Romney saying he's going to reset the Russian Federation and Mr. Putin, I will definitely tell you that Romney has met his match. Because Putin is not going to put with any foolishness over there.
No, and let me just throw one more thing your way for your consideration, and you know, something to be concerned about, Jim. I'm ashamed that I didn't bring it up more promptly, but Patty just sent this along a few minutes ago. There was a little piece of legislation, a resolution that passed in the Senate of the United States by a vote of 90-1 on September the 22nd. Senate Joint Resolution 41 of the 112th Congress. Just by way of setup, Jim, do you remember when it got so bad in the run-up to the Iraq War, when it was obvious there were going to be no weapons of mass destruction found, no nuclear activities, you know, no yellow cake, no aluminum tubes? It was all just a stinking fraud. Do you remember how the Bush administration fell back on, and I will never forget this phrase, they fell back on the claim that Saddam might have nuclear-related program activities. I mean, that's a big drill down from smoking gun being a mushroom cloud, right?
Oh, yeah, of course it is.
Well, listen to the language of this resolution passed on 22 September. The summary of the joint resolution says it reaffirms that the U.S. government and the governments of other responsible countries have a vital interest in working together to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapons capability.
Well,
warns that time is limited to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapons capability. Urges economic and diplomatic pressure on Iran until it implements yada, 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 yada. This is the same kind of language we saw in the run up to the Iraq War. And frankly, if one is into one's classics, one may go and read Polybius. And it's the same kind of stinking run up that was involved in the Third Punic War.
Okay, that's fine. And we know what happened to Carthage. But nonetheless, if in fact there should be some type of war with Iran, what type of war do you think it's going to be?
Jesus, I dare not even...
Particularly with the Russian Confederation, or not Confederation, the Russian Republic, headed by Mr. Putin, who obviously had his own means of political power, and you know that, and I know that. What do you think is going to happen there? I mean, we're looking at a potential type of day after situation.
I think we are looking at something that
we don't need to be.
I don't want to be graphic or make specific predictions, but I would say it exceeds the Balkans of 1914. And it recalls Bismarck's words about Pomeranian grenadiers.
Of course it does, but we don't need to be getting involved with a war with Iran. And I hope that cooler heads will prevail, and there will be listening at their higher levels of government to the agencies that feed in their information, the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, and other agencies as well, ONI. All of these other agencies, they are designed to provide information for the leadership, and I hope the leadership will have the sense to listen. And this will be diffused. And I hope that Mr. Ahmadinejad will cool his heels, and I hope that Netanyahu will cool his heels too. Because if they don't, and we have a situation over there that's going to drag nations and make the Iran into another Balkan situation, we can all bend over and kiss our asses goodbye. I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. I mean, we're not dealing with...
Well, I am convinced that the right wing is trying to get it on before the November election.
But what? To what point?
To the purpose, Jim. And I'm not arguing. I mean, we're just kind of passionately going back and forth here, to the purpose that the right wing of this country, the Republican Party of this country, would burn this country to a cinder.
They would?
To get the presidency.
Anyone would do something like that?
Republicans would.
Oh, God, I don't know.
They are amoral.
Maybe you have better insight into their minds than I do, but... I'm sure that
they set up the cold-blooded killing of a million innocent Iraqis in an attempt to make George Bush reelectable in 2004.
Yeah, but that wasn't nuclear.
Oh, but it was set up on the pretense of nuclear.
That did not involve the Russian Republic.
I mean, consider the 932nd tier right winger that comes over your radio periodically, who said he wanted Libya nuked.
Well, these people are crazy, and I don't want to be dragged into.
Jim, I would respectfully disagree. They're not crazy. They're evil.
Well, they're crazy to me. I mean, crazy is not, in my opinion, minding your own damn business. People are crazy when they get into situations in which they have no being involved. They don't need to be there. They don't need to be doing this stuff. And I've always said on this program, we don't need to be in Afghanistan. What we did in Iraq was a real fiasco. But now we've got a real hornet's nest over there, and God only knows who's going to take power. I mean, as far as the art of diplomacy is concerned,
and they entered into all of it, Jim.
Diplomats in this country, the major diplomats in this country, unlike the French and other nations, their diplomats are not in foreign service officers, do not have the benefit and training of those nations, and I've always felt that about the State Department. The that these people are hacks in many cases, and they have no real training in many cases. I'm not talking about the underlings, the FSO6s and 5s and 7s and things like that. I'm talking about the ones who are the political appointees. I don't have any real training in diplomacy. They really don't, and their decisions reflect.
Do you remember? Do you remember the name of Monica Goodling, Jim?
She was
the woman who was the loyal Bushy graduate of Pat Robertson Law School, who was the liaison from either the Department of State or the Pentagon to the White House.
I know. Yeah.
And she was the one. You know, she's one of those evangelicals who wants to see the world in flames because it makes Jesus come back. Remember,
that's beyond my realm of comprehension, and that's all I can say.
Well, please believe me when I tell you it's true. Well,
I believe it's true, but I mean, you know, I don't think you'd lie to me about that. And I've heard enough when you've spoken about this woman. Now that my mind clears.
I mean, I forget which paper it was, but it was in the last couple of days. Either the New York Times or the Washington Post. I'm thinking it was the Post. Gave op-ed space on its op-ed page to John Hagee, talking about why Iran needs to bleed.
That is indeed unfortunate.
This is the same man who said that Hitler was ordained by God to drive the Jews into a single country so that Israel could be created and Jesus could come back. This man was given op-ed space in a major national newspaper in the last few days.
Well, I mean, after the Balfour Declaration in 1947, Israel did materialize as a separate nation and an enclave there.
But there's a difference between the Balfour Declaration and saying that Hitler was the agent of God.
Well, I don't think he was any agent of God. He was, if anything, the agent of Satan or of the most evil power that ever existed. But what I'm saying is, it's just common sense. You simply can't establish any method of logical decisions based on crap like that, because what would the world be to these people? What would they gain from it? They're not going to gain anything except the world being turned into a burned out cinder. And that's where I see some of this stuff.
But see, Jim, and we're running out of time, but I want you to take seriously to heart that there are people who believe that only the burned-out cinder will make Jesus come back.
Well, I don't believe
and
that.
They're going to be, and the elect are going to be protected somehow from the flames. I'm not kidding. Well, I hate to do it, but we got to roll. Have a wonderful evening, Jim. Thank you for a scintillating conversation.
You got it.
All right. Bye now. Email coming in. I just want to finish up. This is a lovely note. Pim just wrote in, just listening to you in my early morning, heard you talk about fundraising. Forgot to send a message with my contribution, but herewith, definitely keep mentioning fundraising. It's critical you stay on the air. I'm touched and grateful for the amazing community you've built around such important discussions. Regards from Singapore, Pim. I'm stymied, or not stymied, but just stunned by the outpouring of, you know, Bob, let's keep the momentum going, let's make this work. Kate wrote in a little bit ago and she said, keep talking, there are always new listeners who need to know. Kate says, I agree with Robert, a little bit in PayPal every week adds up, and I'm on the same page with Darlene. So thank you, all of you. It's time to get out of here. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Sparky and Lottie in chat room, Texas Betsy, our blogger, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. We're going to fix some bad files there for the podcast, and hopefully that'll sort things out. Thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Go to AICACT.org and learn how you can help bring an end to Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina,
Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on The Horn.